This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki with you on this hump day. Not as hot today, a little cooler. Breezy out yesterday. Windy. Lots to get to today. Epic Blue Jays game last night. I stayed up for all of it. We'll see how that goes throughout the day. Baseball trades are underway. We'll get into that. Winnipeg Blue Bombers, 2 days away from taking on the BC Lions in Vancouver. We'll hear from head coach Mike O'Shea. We'll discuss everything around that. And, of course, the CFL gets started for this week tonight with a game between the Ottawa Redblacks and the Montreal Alouettes. Andrew Kopp was on the afternoon ride yesterday with Hustler and Mr. Rick Ralph. We'll hear about him. And I thought in the Royal Sports Power Hour, gentlemen, we did the lines yesterday. I'll ask you what you think the Jets' power plays and penalty kill should look like with bodies out there. And, of course, we'll hear from Darren Bombing. Bob Weeks live at the Royal Birkdale for the 146 Open, which starts, I guess, tomorrow, but tonight or however, I don't know, the time change. We'll figure that out as well as we go forward in an hour of your phone calls. Gentlemen, how are we today?
Not too bad. Geeked for the Open. Listening to Huss talk about it and all the different things that come into play with. He's something, isn't he? He's just an absolute beauty when he's talking about sprinkle this, sprinkle that, and all the rest of it. But can't wait. And I think the first tee-offs are at like 1:30 or something along those lines, our time sort of thing, in the morning. So it's will be the best thing about the Open and this job is you show up and it's on. Like, it's just the best thing to have it unfolding as we're sitting here working. We're typically watching replays or highlights and stuff like that. So I can't wait. I'm super geeked for it to get going.
Yeah, or The View, which comes on at 9 o'clock our time after we have to I'm just peek behind the curtains here. I might go to bed at 3 p.m. today. You know what I mean? Try and sync. I gotta try and sync my clock to English time. I love the Open. The Masters is the Masters, but the Open is, if whatever the shade below, as close as you can get to something is, that's the Open for me.
Mm-hmm. Is that your favorite major then?
No, I still think Augusta is. There's just something. It's like playing
in
heaven.
Tough picking though. It is like heaven, and then there's the hellish aspect of the British Open that makes it so lovable and so easy to connect with for us as Canadians on the prairie tackling this game sometime in October or so, right? When you see the wind and the sleet and the craziness of it.
We'll ask that on the Boss Pizza fan line today. What's your favorite major? I'll go with Augusta as well. That's still mine, but the Open is always interesting. Remember when Paddy Harrington won it 3 over. Just compared to the other majors and everything that
won it 2 years in a row.
Yeah, that's true. It's better than 3 over though the one time. But 3 over wins a major. That's always the challenge of the Open when that could be like that. Did you watch the Blue Jays game last night? Did you stay up for that? The 15th inning, Roberto Osuna gives up an RBI to Mookie Betts in the 9th, forcing extra innings. And they go to 15 when Hanley Ramirez jacks a home run to win it 5-4 for the Red Sox. And the last two games between these two teams has felt almost, don't tweet me, like the Yankees-Red Sox battles. It is intense, and you can feel that there's a lot riding on this for the Jays. When I watch and listen to the games, which you can again tonight right here on TSN 1290, do you feel the same?
No, when you're going like the depth of the connection with Yankees, Red Sox, really?
Well, it's just
I'm
going to
tweet you
more
about that.
Well, is it not dialed up? Like, do you not get the different feeling in the last two games? And not just because they were close games, but this is intense for the Jays. Like, this is almost.
Well, they're on the sort of life support here. Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah, like they've got to win these two series here and then sort of evaluate going into the last week of the Major League Baseball trade deadline. But even Gibbons is, you know, riding things,
finally
making
getting
moves,
serious,
pulling Justin Smoak for pitch runners in the 8th and stuff like that. Like,
I was surprised at some of the negativity on Twitter when Osuna blew the save. I was like, guys, are you serious? People like saying whether it was, oh, here we go, the Blue Jays again, or anything about Osuna. The game was, I'm right there with you, man. It was a fantastic, wildly entertaining game, and certainly intense when you're, you know, and I'm not cheering for the Blue Jays to win the series. I was cheering for them to sweep it, like pull a miracle off and rip four off in a row sort of thing. But, yeah, it was a lot of fun. Great game, and the whole extra innings thing. The Red Sox have played a lot of baseball as of late, huh?
Yes.
I saw a tweet from Huss during the game, too, is that the most ideal thing is for their game today to be like start early afternoon sort of thing, just because how many innings they played in a very short time span.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not like Roberto Osuna has been the team's best player and was rocking a 22 straight save run or anything. You know what I mean? Sometimes great players have off nights. And unfortunately, he had one at a brutal time for the team because it's not even enough, I think, for the Jays to win this series. They had to sweep Boston to kind of get back into things. And you hope it's not one of those devastating losses that just kind of crushes the spirit of a team,
yeah.
And you just kind of go into a free fall at that point.
Well, to Hustler's point, Rob Longley, who's there, of course, covering this series and covering the Jays throughout the year for the Toronto Sun, we've had him on the program before, tweeted out last night, this is the 58th inning the Red Sox have played since Saturday. 16 innings versus the Yankees, a doubleheader on Sunday, which both were a combined 18 innings, 9 on Monday, and then 15 innings last night. If the Jays could win that game, and then go into tonight and have an afternoon game. Josh Donaldson's banged up. His thumb stayed in the game, said he's fine after it. I would assume Russell Martin will get tonight off after catching all 15 innings. But 58 innings for the Red Sox since Saturday. And if you could have won that game and then gone back at it again with them tonight, you would think that they would be more tired than anything else. But I thought that if the Jays, like you, could sweep this series, go into Cleveland and win that one, but now if they can win this series and win the Cleveland one, I think they're still sitting okay. But if they could have just pulled that out, but intense, and as you said, people on Osuna, I mean, just back and forth with this series, it's been really, really good baseball in my mind because of what's at stake for the Jays. And I think you can tell they're aware of it. Quite honestly, I mean, of course they're aware of it, but it feels like it's just more intense is what I'm trying to say for the Jays anyway.
It was a bunch of fun for sure. Just a great game here. And I really agree with you. Like, I'm way more in Wicks's mindset of where they need to sweep. Like, they need a couple of series here, man, where they need to sweep things to really catapult themselves by the teams in front of them, whether you're talking wild card or to become relevant again within the pursuit of the AL East. Just winning a couple series or winning a few sort of thing, that ain't going to be enough. They need to go on a bit of a heater here.
How much of a heater in your mind?
Ooh, it's got to be a hefty one. I mean, they realistically, we talk about this with the Jets last year all the time, and it's a bit different in baseball because you don't have the loser points or anything, but if the Jays win 10 games in a row, I think they're 4 or 5 games out of a wild card spot.
Right now they are, yeah.
Yeah, so you got to win 10 in a row, and then you kind of get right back into it. And that, I don't even know if that's enough right there to bridge the gap. So, like, that's what you're dealing with when you've kind of wasted and peed down a half of the season right down your leg. You have to win double digits in a row just to be relevant here.
They got 7 teams between them and the Yankees who hold the final
wild card
spot.
So probably more than 10.
Yeah.
And I was listening to the broadcast yesterday. They mentioned the fact that 2 years ago, when the Jays first got into the postseason again, they had I think it was 11-game winning streaks that season. So they were sort of laying it out the math that, you know, they are well aware of the situation, but they did it 2 years ago to get them in the playoffs, and this scenario is much the same. Like this, they have to get to probably 10 or 11-game winning streaks, as you guys said, in a row. And then, you know, well, not in a row, but you lose one or two, and then you go back on that heater. That would be the difference between 20 to 22 game wins in the next 25 to 26. And I just don't know if that's possible with this team.
By all indications, it's not up to this point, I suppose, huh?
And to do that, like, you think it's possible this year?
No. it's just not the same team we're used to, right? Like they're just completely different, and it's mostly offensively related, right? Like that's kind of the main difference from the last 2 years of teams to what this one is now, because the pitching hasn't been outstanding, but it's been good enough, I think. But their offense is in the bottom three, bottom five of basically every offensive category across the AL. So do you expect that to turn around? I don't know. We've had 3/5 of a season already of evidence to point towards that this is just who the Blue Jays are, unfortunately, at this point. And it's just too much time. Too much time has gone by, and it's you just dig yourself too big of a hole, and it doesn't matter. For me, at least, at this point, it doesn't matter. You just kind of watch the games for enjoyment, watch it for Stroman. Hopefully Sanchez finishes the second half healthy. But you're too far back at this point. And like Troy said, even more so than the games, it's just the number of teams. When you need 2, 3, 4 teams to play 500 ball while you play 750, just the odds are so against them right now. I don't see it happening.
Well, this is the Big Show on TSN 1290. Jim, Troy, and Brandon with you. And the reason I am watching right now, and I am interested, is they have 2 more games with the Red Sox tonight and an afternoon or on Thursday. They go to Cleveland. On Monday, we'll sit down and probably do this again, given what the results are. If they can win both those series, if they can take 3 or 4 from the Red Sox, 2 or 3 from the Cleveland Indians, here's their schedule. They're at home for 4 games against the Oakland A's. They then have 3 home games against the LA Angels. They then travel to Chicago to take on the White Sox, who are unloading players like there's no tomorrow. So you have the A's, the Angels, and the White Sox. If you were ever going to go on a 9 or 10 game heater, it's that week. They then, though, on August 3rd, have a day off, and they go to Houston and take on the Astros for 3. They have a day off, come home, and they host the Yankees, the Pittsburgh Pirates, and the dreaded Tampa Bay Rays, if you're a Jays fan. So it tees up over the next 2 weeks, if they can win this Boston series, if they can win the 3 games in Cleveland on the weekend, to come home and go on a heater, if you ever are, I think, in my mind, against the A's, the Angels, and then the White Sox. But then when you're looking at your next heater, and I guess that's why you have to go on 2 heaters, is you have to play the Astros, the Yankees, the Pirates, and the Rays.
There's a lot of ifs in your Jays talk, bro.
Well, I like the chances over the next week. But when you get into August and leave Chicago, the south side, and really maybe that'll dictate it. If you lose or split series with the A's, the Angels, and the White Sox, that takes you into August. Trade deadline's at the end of the month. So you're saying you don't believe?
Yeah. I'll sign up under that one instead of all these ifs you're talking about.
I got another if for you guys in the next segment when I'll see if, once again, the Jets are done, or if you'd like to go look at the list and see if anybody else wants to come on board or you think they should go on board. But we started before the show began this morning. There's a poll out on our movie, favorite movies list, or an elimination of movies going forward. And there was an interesting one right out the gate. And this is a question we'll pose on the Boss Pizza fan line as well.
It's just the instigators is what it's called, some sort of a hockey show. And they were just, and it's so interesting, right? I think they're mostly based in hockey. And they got 36 sports movie showdown here with, set up in brackets. And they got a bunch of movies that we'd all be familiar with in the sporting world. But in the first round draw, right out of the gate at the top of the bracket, Slapshot up against Bull Durham. That's a bunch of crap. Like, you would meet in
the finals.
Final Four sort of thing, wouldn't you?
The finals.
Yeah. Like, right out of the gate. What a monster hill for Slapshot to survive Bull Durham.
So who do you have?
Well, don't you go to jail as a Canadian if you say anything but Slapshot?
Yeah, it's a 5-year offense.
It's horrible. Yeah. Like underneath
it's in the
that, in the bracket beneath that is Rudy and Youngblood. Like you couldn't split up Slapshot and Bull Durham.
You even got Raging Bull and Hoosiers.
Put them at different ends of this, like the bracket. Come on, man.
Yeah, I go Slapshot too.
And they got Rounders in here. I don't know that Rounders.
Oh.
Is poker a sport or a game?
Oh. If you guys heard online that epic debate
of game and sports?
David Pratt and Don Taylor, two icons in the BC sports world on a different network, have a radio show.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you have to YouTube that. They went at it when I think it was Pratt who said, he talked about a 77-year-old gentleman at the poker table. And he said, when you're at the table for 18 hours in a row, it's a grueling sport. And Don Taylor said, wait a minute, that's not a sport. Are you kidding me? That's longer than three overtimes in the NHL? And he said, the mental grind, and at that age, to sit at that table and keep alert for that many hours is a grind in a sport. And they literally, I thought they were, people thought you and I disagree on some things. I thought they were literally, and I was told that they had to hold, like even, they would go on a break and come back and continue the debate and had to be separated or kept apart during the break. Like, it is epic. But to your question, if that was, that's what the debate was, is poker a sport?
You know, Monopoly can get pretty grinding, too, when you get into the wee hours of the night. And you're trying to finish someone off with all the property. That's poker is so not a sport. It's not even funny. It's not even a conversation to be had. Notice that the gentleman you were talking about there said sitting for 18 hours.
Sitting. That's what the counterpoint was. You're sitting there, and he's screaming at him, and he says, but you're staying, you have to, in the game of poker, stay focused.
We had an early tete-a-tete in this room back in the early days where Jay Richardson, the first co-host here, said that car racing wasn't a sport.
Oh.
Yeah, and I said, dude. Right? And we got into it pretty good there with the G's and all the physical demands, because there you're sitting. And so there's all kinds of stresses on your body that are physical there. And I can understand, I love poker. I love sports, like, obviously. But there is a debate to be had as to at what point in time is something simply a game, and at what point in time does it become a sport. And I think what distinguishes, the best single thing to distinguish those two would be some level of physicality.
Well, the physical nature of sitting at a table for 18 hours.
Well, hey, anyone that's played poker for a marathon like that, it is demanding, and it is hard to be disciplined, for sure. But I think still you're playing. I think it's a game. I say a little bit reluctantly, nonetheless, Rounders is in the sports movie showdown talking about.
I will save my Jets question for another segment. We'll continue this discussion because we're way over. We'll finish it coming back on is poker a sport or not on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Shining stars in the world of sports. Every week, TSN 1290 would like to showcase and reward these individuals who are making a big impact and difference in what they do. Nominate a Manitoban athlete, coach, or volunteer who's dedicated to making their sport matter. Every Friday on The Big Show, we'll showcase a Subway Sports Star of the Week and reward him or her with a $50 Subway gift card. Visit TSN1290.ca to nominate your sports star, and we could be featuring them soon. The debate has already started on Twitter. Is poker a sport?
If poker is a sport, then chess, you would have to be in the camp to say chess is a sport.
The Baron, using that logic, you could say that guys that play video games for 12 hours are athletes.
Oh, I still got a chance in the majors there. That's all.
Video games at a competition for 12 hours or just in your basement? That's two different things. If you're playing poker in your basement compared to sitting at a table for 18 hours with $500K on the line, that's different to me too.
Well, the money's all relative, bruh, right? You got some cake in the bank and you're playing for $500K. You can have $20 in your pocket into your name playing for that. It's all relative.
Loyal listener Brian says, how many food movies are on that list because your friend Hustler thinks eating is a sport? hashtag not a sport.
hashtag supersize me.
Although there's some physicality there, right? Whether you're dealing with it during the game or after. A sport needs to be created to watch these athletes after these eating competitions, no?
I get, and You know, and I guess like if you're right. I mean, I would think that if you're on tour going to these poker tournaments and under the bright lights and it's being televised and you have to sort of try and, you know, that's, I guess, no different than if you literally have guys over on a Friday night and all of a sudden it's noon Saturday and you still got three guys at the table.
Oh, yeah. I remember some all-nighters, like some fun poker. For sure, man. Like you can, and it's always hard. Anyone that's played poker knows that it's hard to be disciplined. But that's, is that sport or is that simply a game? This is a debate and an argument that's been around for as long as sport and game has been around, right? And it's always a neat thing to take into consideration and discuss. But I do, like, how about darts? Because there is that, like, there's physicality. Like, when you're measuring, when you're talking about the coordination that's involved, eye-hand to deliver, those guys that play darts, the guys and gals, and you watch it on TV, and there's 20,000 people in an arena.
At least.
And the way that they, like, their eye-hand in the way they deliver those darts wherever the hell they want on that board is pretty mind-blowing.
Yeah, poker is purely mental, right?
Yes.
Like, is there any sort, I understand needing to be sharp and all that sort of thing, but is there literally any physical exertion
outside of flipping your cards over in disgust, maybe if somebody calls your bluff or pushing your chips in, no.
And taking a pee break.
Well, that's what I think the physicality is. I think the physicality is like, take poker out of it. Do you stay up 18, 19, 20 hours?
But
in
that's
a row?
Mental.
Yeah, it's mental.
That's all mental.
Is
there's,
it?
There's no, well, how is
absolutely.
It physical?
Well, because you have to sit there and you have to stay. And I know mentally you have to stay focused and all that, but you also have to be comfortable. You also can't be sitting there for 18 hours and going, not moving around and not like those guys stand up, they walk around. Like the grind on your body for staying up 18 hours isn't as mentally challenge as it is the mental challenge, but it's still a challenge on your body.
I don't know that you call it a grind on your body, sitting stationary in a air-conditioned type of an atmosphere with drinks at your side. I don't know how much of a grind that is, brother.
Well, I stay more alert and focused when I'm moving around playing five games in 2 days than I do sitting for 18 hours.
Yeah, but yeah, you're not going to get me on the grind of sitting in a comfortable chair for.
And this is how the debate raged. Like, so before we go to break, is it a sport? We're going to call this Weird Wednesday for now. We have Fun Friday. I'm
wacky
call
Wednesday.
This wacky,
I love poker, man. I absolutely love it. But no, it's not a sport. It's a game.
Yeah, I love watching it. Love playing it. It's entertaining. It's a great game. Not a sport.
I don't know. I'm undecided.
You're not going to, again, get slivers on a fence, are you?
Well, how long do I have to sit on the fence?
I don't know. You seem comfortably
hours.
Perched
That's
on it.
A sport.
That's a sport. Well, dealing with the slivers and all the rest of it.
We'll ask you on the Boss Pizza fan line as well. So far, the Boss Pizza fan line today is going to be, who do you want on the Jets PK and power play? What is your favorite movie, Slapshot or Bull Durham? Which would you take? And is poker a sport? Like it. We'll talk and hear from the Blue Bombers next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Stream us on the iHeartRadio app on all your favorite devices, or get a customized playlist to suit your mood or activity. Your music, your station's always free. Download the iHeartRadio app today and stream on. During the break, you can YouTube this debate between Don Taylor and Dave Pratt. It was on the Team 1040, which is a TSN station, from 2009. I don't think it was then, but Bell Media Station, Team 1040. And I just listened to one clip, and I just went to the middle of it, and it was David Pratt saying, to win the World Series of Poker, it's day after day after day of 12, 15, 16 hours sitting there, the physicality of it, the mental grind, and he's getting very animated, and Don Taylor comes back, I do more physical activity folding laundry! And they like
that's
and it
fair, yeah.
And the beauty of most debates is it wasn't put on at all. It was just like They just kept getting more and more, and then Taylor would just always come back, folding laundry takes more effort than sitting at that table. Great debate. We'll move on to the Blue Bombers, of course. They'll head to BC tomorrow on Thursday, take on the Lions at 9 p.m. Central. We'll have full Manuk Dencher Blue Bomber game day coverage starting at 7 o'clock on Friday with my co-host, Mr. Troy Westwood, as well as Darren Bauman, who is going to join us later in today's program and tee up the game and give us the latest from practice and what's been going on there, as well as Mr. Chris Walby. Getting into it, gentlemen, it's very interesting how these two teams match up, the schemes, what's going to take place. We'll start on the defensive side of the ball with defensive coordinator Richie Hall, and we'll ask him about, or was asked about, the defense being more aggressive for the Blue Bombers going forward, and specifically on Friday night against the Lions.
You know, I think when you look at last year, the first three or four games, you know, we maybe didn't get off to the rousing start that we have this year. Why is that? I don't know, but I just know that we're weeks ahead of what this year than we were last year in all components, you know, whether it's bringing pressure, whether it's stopping the run, whether it's just playing overall defense. And I think right now we're a better team than we were last year.
The whole stopping the run thing, nobody's running. So I don't know how much you want to, you know, how much of a celebration that is. Although, having said that, the Bombers are the very best in the CFL in only allowing 41.7 on the ground. But you can douse that fairly quickly when you look at their pass game allowed, and they're eighth in the league. Nobody would be behind Hamilton there. They sit on the throne allowing 440.7 in the air, but the Bombers are eighth and allowing 346.3. So yeah, the defense a little bit improved from last year for sure, I suppose. And there is more disturbance regarding the pocket. But a long way to go still to being, I think, above average in the CFL.
Yeah, and it's just too bad in the NFL. I think there's still a lot of, I mean, it's been a trend towards passing in both leagues, but the NFL, the run game is still a massive part of it. And if the Bombers led, you know, down south in rushing yards against per game, it would be a big deal. But in the CFL, it borderline doesn't matter. Like, that's basically where it's at right now with defenses. And hey, we saw in the Calgary game, right, at the end when, you know, Winnipeg had a chance to stop the Stamps, get the ball back, the Stamps kind of ran it down their throat a little bit. So it's okay that they're doing well against the run, but I'd rather them be, you know, under 300 a game through the air than 40 or less on the ground.
Yeah, and I wonder in the NFL if it's because of the extra down that the running game is more prevalent. I would assume so.
Absolutely.
And how it is approached. But it is, like, there are NFL teams that just, you'll finish a game with 47 yards rushing, and they'll just keep pounding the ball with 5 minutes left, even just to, whether they're up or down, just to offset the defense. Do you think the defense for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers needs to be more aggressive?
In what?
Not just Friday, but in general, overall?
Well, no, we're saying that that's a noticeable aspect of this team, that they are more aggressive than they were last year. They're doing a better job of disrupting the pocket, not necessarily getting to the quarterback, although they've got six sacks here in the games played, but they definitely are creating a little bit more disturbance, I think, of the pocket, but they definitely need to get better. When you're talking about, you know, on average, they're allowing 31.3 points per game, which is eighth. And when your pass defense is eighth, I think that's of concern. And their net yards is sixth allowed in the CFL. They are not an average defense yet. And that's the defense needs to get better for sure. And you look at the secondary and just kind of wonder what strides it will take during the season here.
Well, and to that point, Richie Hall was asked if BC is the best offense in the league.
Everyone has their own opinion. I know they're very talented, you know. And, you know, not only this week, but every week our work's cut out for us because, you know, when you look at the league, you know, they're all explosive, you know, and they all bring their own little twist to the table, you know. But our job is to go out there and keep them out of the end zone. And, you know, I always tease Lopo. I said, well, we're going to try to keep them under 50. Keep them under 50. He's like, 50? I said, keep them under 50. And we've done that so far this year. But, you know, our job is, you know, to minimize their points. And I think we do that, we get our chance of being successful.
Yeah, and the points thing is a problem, right? It has been a problem up to this point in time when you're averaging surrendering 31.3, and BC will put some points up on you. right? They're averaging 29.8, which is third best in the CFL. So BC can score. And we saw last year in the playoff game, the what defined that game, it wasn't the attempt at the 61-yard field goal to me. It was the fact that unless the Bombers created a turnover, which they did not in those final two drives by BC, they could not force the BC Lions into a punt situation. They just simply could not get the offense of BC off the field on the final two drives when it was absolutely mandatory for them to do so. And when you don't create a takeaway the way the Bombers relied on so heavily last year, then you're absolutely screwed. And that's what ended up costing them the game last year.
They're the best offense in the league in your mind?
Offense or defense?
Offense.
BC?
Yeah. I know they're ranked third, but like Matt Dunnigan and Milt Stegall, and we talked about it with Milt yesterday, arguing whether Edmonton or BC is the best team in the league. Who's the best offense?
Well, I don't think right now I don't think you can say it's BC right now. I think you've probably...
I don't either.
I think you've kind of got to lean towards... Like, they're up there, but Edmonton has been pretty lights out as well out of the game, and you're going to take anything away from Calgary? Like, it's a pretty mumbled... I think it's pretty muddied up top of the CFL to try and determine who the best offense is right now.
Yeah, it's tight. I think it... personally, I think it's between Calgary and BC. I think BC might be the worst matchup for the Bombers offensively because the amount of receivers that they have and the talent, and I just don't think the Bombers DBs can match up with them outside of TJ Heath. That's going to be the one guy who you can kind of count on to hold his own at this point of the season. But I don't know if the Lions are the best, but they're easily the most explosive, right? Like, I mean, it could be second and 20, and they throw a jump ball up there, Burnham, Arsenault. Like, they've got a number of guys that at any point could go 60, 70 yards on you.
And that's a very good point to make. The strength, just exactly what they have when you're talking Moore, Arsenault, Burnham, Inouye, and Johnson, going up against what is arguably the weakness of the Bombers still with passing yards allowed in the secondary. That's a difficult battle here for the boys on upcoming.
Well, and if those two don't, then Nick Moore comes in and goes off for 200 yards like he did. So a very deep at receiver. And you mentioned that in the offseason going into this season, that's probably the best receiving core.
And they run, right? They average there. Yeah. They run quite a bit here and averaging close to 100 yards in 91.8 yards. They can't, Wally Buono has always been a fairly balanced guy with the attack. So the BC Lions, unlike a number or the majority of the CFL teams right now, they don't hesitate to put the ball on the ground.
This is the Big Show on TSN 1290, 42 minutes past the hour, and defensive coordinator for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers was also asked about the, due to injury, the additions of Jackson Jeffcoat to the defensive line, and of course linebacker Kyle Knox in for Ian Wild.
Yeah, they did a good job. You know, they did a good solid job. Knoxie, you know, he played, like you said, a new position, but you know, he was a Will in college, even though a Will's different than what we play up here, but you know, he got a chance to play every snap, or possibly every snap. And you know, my whole thing was worrying about if he was going to run out of gas, you know, but you know, he flew around and he was a Knox that he's capable of being, you know. And you know, physically he's got all the tools, mentally he had to adjust, but it didn't slow him down. You know, he still played well. Jeffcoat, you know, I think he had a great training camp and rushed the pass, and he had good pass rushers. And you know, his biggest thing is just getting used to being in the game speed as far as being able to play all those snaps, because in the preseason you only play a quarter here or a quarter there, where you know, we were on the field for 65 snaps the other day, and you know, he's got to make sure that his energy is going for at least 50 of those snaps.
How did you guys think they played against the Argos?
The defense specifically?
Jeffcoat and Knox coming
well,
in. Well,
now I can't recall seeing anything. Was it Jeffcoat that gave Ray the forearm shiver there late in the game?
No, that was Corey Johnson.
Oh, okay. And has anything come of it?
I haven't heard a thing.
Yeah, no. I can't recall seeing anything either. So, which is really strange to me. But Jeffcoat, you know, four tackles. Didn't notice him a whole lot out there, but. But you know, the decent game, I suppose. And also, like, the linebacking core, there was one time that you saw Kyle Knox get beat in coverage, but other than that, I thought that he was decent as well. So it's I think that the one thing that really stood out in the game against the Argos is that you thought Alexander Carmichael and Knox, that looking at that side, that Ricky Ray was just going to feast on that side. And in the first half, they did. Like, the first half was knocking on a nightmare. When you allow 243 through the air, Ricky Ray was literally moving the ball at will. It was just, it looked horrifying what was going to transpire over four quarters. And then whatever the adjustments were at halftime, something happened where the defense just came out and, like, night and day, to go 243 in the first half, allow 87 in the second half, the defense looked really impressive. I know there's a couple of drops to aid the Bombers, but they looked so much better in that second half. There's reason for excitement maybe upcoming in this BC game just simply by what they accomplished in that second half.
Yeah, maybe being the operative word there, because it's, I don't know, it's just kind of hard to get a read on it. Because you had two ends of the spectrum there, where it was, you know, we're looking at maybe two or three new starters in the secondary to, hey, maybe they turn the corner. Like, when you have that big of a disparity, it's hard to get a real good grasp on it. But I don't think there will be much doubt after this game against the Lions. If there's more struggles in this one, which I kind of expect there to be, you know, hopefully Kevin Fogg can get back into the lineup soon. And you wonder at some point, too, if maybe the secondary, which kind of looks like it might be the Achilles heel of this team, maybe gets improved somehow, whether it be through trades or some kind of signings.
Fogg did return to the practice field yesterday. We'll have more on that when Darren Bomming joins us at 8:30. On the offensive side of the ball, as we're talking Bombers and Lions on the Big Show, TSN 1290, offensive coordinator Paul LaPolice was asked about his offense in the first quarters so far this season.
You know, I think it always is, you know, you certainly got to make sure you're calling what your players are most comfortable with and hoping they're being productive when they get opportunities and, you know, and making our plays. It always comes down to your execution. So we're trying to make sure we do things our players are most comfortable with and they get their execution up. And certainly last game we had a couple drops early, and it's hard to, you know, have a couple drops and be out of position and get backed up and then you're in second and long. So just I think a big part of it is being productive on first down.
Now, that first quarter last week, remember, it starts out with a kickoff return, and then they go four plays punt, two plays punt, two plays punt. So that was their first quarter. You got the kickoff return for a touchdown, then punt, 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 and it looked ominous for sure. And then the offense heats up in that second half to look, and it's a beautiful drive. Like, the one thing that the offense has done on a couple of times here, to start the third quarter, Toronto comes out with a real time-munching type drive, settles for a field goal, and then the Bombers come out with a 12-play drive and are able to find the end zone. We've seen Matt Nichols and this offense really respond with super important possessions and drives in critical parts of the game, and the Bombers never really looked back after that touchdown. Paul LaPolice had a bit of a Picasso in play calling in that game, and don't forget that the Toronto Argonauts had wreaked so much havoc on O-lines and protection for quarterbacks. They kept a clean sheet with zero sacks allowed, and Matt Nichols looked pretty darn comfortable back there. So that's another big positive and another sort of point of fusion, I think, that happened in this game with this O-line. There were some question marks a little bit coming into this game and some concern for sure, but they stepped up and came together and played a real super sound game.
We'll get into more of the offense from Paul LaPolice later in the program, his thoughts on the BC defense and how he wants to approach the game as well. When we come back on the Big Show, though, we're going to delve into some of these baseball trades and get into what we think may happen with the Jays as they host they're in Boston to take on the Red Sox again tonight right here on TSN 1290. This is the Big Show on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to be a media sponsor for the upcoming 2017 Canada Summer Games in our city from July 28th to August 13th. 16 sports, 250 events. 20,000 visitors will come to Winnipeg for the 50th anniversary of the Canada Summer Games, and you can help paint the town red, yellow, and orange up until this Friday, July 21st. Of course, you can do it throughout the games as well every day, but on Friday is the deadline when you wear your official 2017 Canada Summer Games clothing to take a picture of yourself and share the photo using the handle at 2017 Canada Games and hashtag gear up for a chance to win a Via Rail promotional travel credit. Visit canadagames.ca/2017 for more information about Games Gear Fridays. Now, the entertainment lineups for the opening and closing ceremonies were recently announced. Opening ceremonies at MTS Center have several acts on Friday, July 28th, including Serena Ryder. The closing ceremonies at Investors Group Field on Sunday, August 13th, several acts as well, including Fred Penner, Sierra Noble, and Brett Kissel. Tickets for both ceremonies are on sale now at Ticketmaster.ca. And if you're looking for something other than the games and just want to have a good time, the Manitoba Liquor and Lottery's Canada Games Festival is in place for fun and entertainment between July 29th and August 12th. It'll be 11 days and over 150 artists and fireworks every night. Performers such as the Crash Test Dummies and the Winnipeg Symphony Orchestra with Fred Penner. Visit canadagames.ca/2017 for a full festival lineup. The Big Show, Jim, Troy, and Brandon on TSN 1290. Royal Sports Power Hour around the corner. We're going to hear some comments from Andrew Kopp, the Winnipeg Jets forward who's entering his third season with the Jets, was on the afternoon ride. And Bob Weeks is also going to talk about the 146th Open during the Royal Sports Power Hour. Trades have begun, gentlemen, and the contenders are trying to shore things up. The New York Yankees late last night, like around midnight, finalized a deal they were working on all day and for a couple of days, where they acquire infielder Todd Frazier and relievers David Robertson and Tommy Canley from the Chicago White Sox for reliever Tyler Clippard and three prospects. Not only is this interesting with Headley at third base and some high-end prospects in the minors for the Yankees, but it also keeps the Red Sox, who are in desperate search for a third baseman, away from Todd Frazier. Your thoughts on the Yankees not only getting these guys, but keeping Frazier away from the Red Sox?
Yeah, this trade, or this sort of rekindling the notion that the evil empire is back here of the Yankees in making a move here to thwart or take away some of what the Red Sox are looking for. Of course, the Yankees have lost 17 of the last 24, and they're 3.5 games behind the Red Sox. And I suppose what you have to look at this trade the very most is the fact now in the bullpen that you get a three-headed monster in Chapman, Robertson, and Betances, right, for the Yankees. And we've seen teams do great things come playoffs and go win the World Series having just an absolute killer bullpen, and people are leaning that way and looking at what the Yankees have acquired here. And then also considering the nightmare for the Yankees at first and third base, of Frazier, who they picked up, is going to be a bit of an add to that as well. So for fans of the Pinstripes, they hope this all comes to fruition and they're able to hunt down the nasty Red Sox.
Yeah, for fans of the Pinstripes, as Troy's face is literally beaming from ear to ear, it makes me sick. I don't see how you could look at this as a negative move for the Yankees, right? If you strengthen some of the weaknesses in your team. So it's obviously a positive move for them. I'm not a big fan of either the Yankees or the Sox, but sign me up for Yankees, Red Sox in the postseason. Mm-hmm. That's kind of where I'm at. So as long as this helps the Yankees get back into the playoffs, and maybe we can work out not so much the ALDS, maybe another seven gamer in the ALCS. If this move helps the Yankees do that, then I'm down for that.
The Arizona Diamondbacks are 10.5 back of the LA Dodgers, but they do hold the first wild card in the National League by a half a game. And they went out yesterday and solidified a hole they have for a right-handed bat and the outfield in acquiring J.D. Martinez from the Detroit Tigers for three prospects. And this is interesting to me because it's a solid move for the Diamondbacks. But what's interesting, and I know Martinez is going to be an unrestricted free agent, is just how cheap he came. The three prospects aren't as highly touted. And the things I've read about this deal when it went down yesterday was a lot of people going, that's it? Like, that's all it costs to get J.D. Martinez, who missed the start of the season with a foot injury, but he's hitting .305, 16 home runs, and 39 RBI since returning. He's 29 years old. Like, I mean, I like the deal for the Arizona Diamondbacks, but are you surprised that's all it took to get a guy of this caliber into your lineup?
I don't know, measuring all that sort of thing, I'm not these types of things never really surprise here, because you're always dealing with sort of what ultimately ends up becoming fair market value. So surprised? No, I can't say I'm surprised.
Maybe they just asked the Red Sox for too much, and that's why the Red Sox didn't grab him?
Maybe. Or maybe the Red Sox have a different target in mind. Yeah. It's hard to say, right? And the Red Sox, I mean, their stable of prospects is still crazy deep. So teams are obviously, you know, Detroit's going to ask for, you know, maybe instead of three prospects, hey, you give us number one in the system, you can have J.D. Martinez. And the Red Sox are probably thinking, well, we need a little bit more than just J.D. Martinez for some of our top guys. So it's not a huge surprise, but a good trade for Arizona.
And he is an outfielder. I get that. Like, he's they're pretty solid in Boston in the field with their guys. So then it always comes back to the Jays, gentlemen, and we know the plight. We know everything else. Any other thoughts on whether they make a deal or not, or who? Or is it just the same as we've discussed yesterday and previous days? Like, if you were the Jays to augment this next 2 weeks, what would you be looking for in your mind?
You know what I would like to see, and this is maybe just a sort of a fan perspective, and Cena, I would like to see them move on from Jose Bautista. Like, to find somewhere that he wants to go, or a team that wants to have him, just for that. I have nothing to base this on, but I wonder a little bit if him being around and lingering sort of thing is sort of holding the team back a little bit in the clubhouse.
Well, we'll discuss that and more with the Jays later on in the program and open on the Boss Pizza fan line, because we're always talking about who they would deal to get stuff, mm-hmm. but we never talk from the perspective of if they're looking to help them get in the playoffs, what they'd be looking for specifically. We'll do that as well. But up next, the Royal Sports Power Hours on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is a proud supporter of the 5th Annual Stars for Special Golf Tournament, Tuesday, August 23rd at Glendale Golf and Country Club. It's a Texas Scramble-style tournament with proceeds going to the Special Olympics Manitoba. Lots of fun throughout. Each team is assigned a celebrity golfer to play with for the 9 holes. Includes dinners, draws, silent auction, and much more. For more details, simply visit specialolympics.mb.ca. The Royal Sports Power Hour. On The Big Show, TSN 1290, Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you. And lots to get to in this hour. We'll delve into what we all feel the Jets' power play and penalty kills should look like, NHL news and notes. And at the bottom of this hour, Bob Weeks is going to join us from the Royal Birkdale as the 146th Open gets underway early. Tomorrow morning, Central Time. Gentlemen, Andrew Kopp, after signing his two-year, $2 million deal with the Winnipeg Jets, and by the way, there's still only one remaining restricted free agent that needs a contract for this upcoming season. It's Connor Hellebuyck. His arbitration hearing is scheduled for August 1st. We'll wait and see if something gets done before that. But Kopp joined the afternoon ride on TSN 1290 yesterday with Rick Ralph and Hussler. And we'll start with how Kopp felt his play has improved after 2 years, or what's different for him after two full seasons in the National Hockey League.
How much different of a player are you, and just how much more comfortable are you now after playing these last couple of years in the National Hockey League going into next year?
I think comfort level is definitely a lot more. You get in tune with the schedule, you get in tune with what your body needs, what, you know, you need to do on a daily basis. You know your way around the city better, you know your restaurant. And then just within the room, you know, you have those relationships with, you know, the coaches, the strength guys, the trainers, and then obviously your teammates and players, and, you know, turning to be close friends. So you're just dialed in a little bit earlier into the season, and just it comes more naturally. So just in terms of all the off-ice part, that's kind of, your comfort level gets a lot higher. And then on the ice, I think I've definitely developed same type of player that I was when I came in, but obviously you have little things that you need to improve on every day and each and every year. So I feel like I'm an improved player, and I definitely say my comfort level on the ice within the systems and, you know, with teammates and whatnot, knowing where each other's going to be has definitely gotten a lot better over the last 2 years. So really looking forward to taking a few more jumps these next 2 years.
Are you impressed with his development the last 2 years? Where is that?
Absolutely. I'd love to hear a dissenting voice from that thought. Like, who wouldn't be impressed with what he's done? He's a real good skater. He's got plenty of sandpaper. He's got a real solid, super sneaky, wicked release. And he just seems to, and the 200-foot game thing is there for him. I think, and it's real. It's going to be fascinating to watch what he's able to grow into ultimately here. And I'm really looking forward to see what he's able to accomplish this year.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how you can't be impressed with a fourth-round pick at what he's done so far. Just a relatively short time. Usually, you know, kind of the later-round picks you see get into the league at around 22, 23. But he's already made a bit of an impact in two seasons. So it kind of comes down to, you know, can he make an impact in the top nine regularly on a playoff team, or at least a playoff hopeful team? Because there's no doubt he's a good fourth-line player in the NHL right now, but can he be that consistent top-nine guy that you could potentially, like we saw last year, you know, maybe throw up there with a Wheeler or a Scheifele or a Little and have him contribute a little bit and maybe make the top-nine a bit more balanced offensively?
Fourth round, 104th overall in the 2013 NHL draft. Here's Kopp more specifically on him himself and his game and the improvements he's felt he's done since he started with the team two seasons ago.
You kind of always have confidence in yourself and belief that you can do, you know, anything that the coach asks you, whether it's, you know, get a shutdown guy or a penalty kill or score goals or whatever it is. So I feel like I've kind of been able to show, you know, bits and pieces of all of that, and I think I just need to, especially with the goal scoring part, just be more consistent with it. You know, there's a couple of times where I got on a few runs last year, but I need to kind of keep that going throughout the entire year. And then I don't know, I think just my offensive game, I think my speed and quickness has gotten a lot better over the last 2 years. I've kind of I was a little thicker up top maybe when I came into Winnipeg, and we've kind of molded myself into still very strong, but kind of working on the quickness and pace of my game. So I feel like that's improved. And a lot of it's just gaining that confidence and comfort level with your line mates and stuff. And, you know, I like the versatility that I've shown, whether it's playing with Scheifele and Wheeler or Lowry and Armia, or even being on the fourth line, kind of being able to do whatever it is that Paul asks. So I like that part of my game. I think that's grown, especially since I hadn't played a lot of wing before last year.
I was a little thicker up top when I moved to Winnipeg too, and it's only gotten worse for me. But Andrew Kopp doing that. And, you know, what I want to focus on there, guys, is just his, I don't want to say general awareness, but, you know, obviously he's being told on how to work on himself and his game and what to do. But to sort of do that in 2 years and to sort of redefine your body as well as your game and moving to the wing and doing all these things that, I mean, obviously you do what the coach asks you to do and you do what the trainers tell you to do, but it's to do it and to accept it and to go forward with it from what you have in mind of yourself can often be two different things. Are you happy with that aspect of Andrew Kopp's game?
Well, to me, any athlete that isn't, you're dumb if you're not listening to, you know, if you have world-class training there and if they're telling you things you need to do and you say, you used, I thought, a too strong a word, as far as, you know, tweaking your body, and when you're talking about utilizing or getting functional strength going to best suit what you're trying to achieve with your sport, and you come up from, you know, when you're in Michigan, they've obviously got pretty good strength coach and all the rest of it, right? They got real serious things in play there. You come up to the NHL team, you would hope that you're taking a step up with that, and if they're just able to make a tweak here or there, then you can have a fairly profound functional effect on what you're doing as an athlete. So to me, that's a no-brainer. If you're not doing that, you are a moron of sorts. You have to take advantage of the elite situation, the elite training staff that you're walking into to best utilize your talents and skills with your body. And as far as moving out to the wing, you know, Ray Ferraro said this quote a couple of years ago, and I love it. Any centerman, turn off your brain, you can play along the boards. So it's It's that's when you say the Jets have too many centers. To me, that's where I think there's a debate to be had to say you want a bunch of centers in case in times of need here. And any of those guys, any of the guys playing center can always bounce out to the left or the right wall. And just you play a much more simple game. There's many less responsibilities involved. And it's paid off for Andrew Kopp to have another piece here with the Jets that can go in the middle if you want or flourish on that left wall.
Yeah, I think ultimately his game is best suited towards the wing. But, I mean, Peter Laviolette in the playoffs for a number of years, whenever there was a defensive zone draw, would have two centers out there on the ice to begin the faceoff, just because, you know, how valuable he believes those things are. So to have that kind of versatility, you know, with guys like Kopp and, you know, even a Matty Perreault, I agree. I don't think, I mean, if you had 12 centers, I think you're just fine as a hockey team. I wouldn't be worried for a second about this team having too many guys that can play down the middle.
The Big Show on TSN 1290, 13 minutes past the hour. Jim Troy and Brandon were discussing Andrew Kopp's interview on the afternoon ride yesterday with Rick Ralph and Husser. And Husser asked Andrew Kopp, now that he's had a few months since the season ended, what his thoughts were on last year, the fact that the Nashville Predators had one more regular season win than the Jets and the run that they went on, and what Kopp expects for the team next season.
Well, I think that in particular shows that, you know, there's so much disparity between the league. Like, you know, any team on any given night can win, and, you know, it's just a matter of getting hot as a team and finding your team game at the right time. So it was cool to see Nashville make it that far, but at the same time, a little bittersweet. You know, we felt like we you know, won a record against them in the regular season. We had a great Central Division record, but kind of our East Coast record was kind of what was put behind the eight ball. So, I feel like we have a lot of optimism as a team going into next year. I feel like we got better in free agency. I feel like, you know, our younger players are going to take another step. And, you know, I think, you know, our team is kind of gelling to the point where we feel like we can be, you know, a formidable force in the West.
Andrew Kopp talking about last season, the run the Predators went on, and the expectations for this upcoming season. North End Rick just tweeted us and said, of all the Jets that I expect to make strides this season, Kopp ranks right behind Kyle Connor. Interesting comments from Kopp there about that and the parity in the league and where they can go. Again, development is mentioned there amongst another member of the Winnipeg Jets organization, banking on some more development. And North End Rick saying he expects that. I know a lot of fans are from Kopp and guys like Kyle Connor. And I guess it always leads to the question of, is there going to be enough development next year or over the offseason to help this team get in the playoffs?
That's the million-dollar question, or maybe, you know, maybe that's not the million-dollar question, but it's one of the overall defensive game of the Jets and how you solve that, how you get the guys, whether the combination of system and buy-in to deliver it night in, night out, maybe that's the million-dollar question. But certainly a player like Kopp, and go down the list of these young players, the Jets had, what, the fourth youngest team in the NHL, are they going to take that step? The somewhat scary thing is that there were other teams in the NHL last year that shared the youthfulness of the Winnipeg Jets that were considerably more successful, and all of those teams will be the same sort of thing. Just the way the NHL is constructed right now, with the salary cap implications, the number of ELCs that are into play for a bunch of these teams, there's all kinds of these situations across the league where they're expecting their young players, first, second, third year guys, to take that next step, right? Everyone's banking on it, and there's going to be some regression. Not all these young guys, not just with the Jets, but league-wide, are going to take what looks like a natural step forward. You're always going to have situations where a player stalls or regresses, and hopefully the Jets escape one of those or too many of those this year.
Yeah, and I think the biggest storyline for the Jets this year, it isn't even any of the players. It's this is Paul Maurice's season. You got all the pieces in place right now. Everything kind of depends on him basically doing a 180 when it comes to team defensive play and special teams, because those are the only issues plaguing the club right now. Offensive skill will not be an issue all season long. It's going to be how well they play in the other areas of the ice, and to me that all falls on the shoulders of Paul Maurice. And if he's able to kind of re-bottle that magic that he kind of sprinkled over the team during that playoff run a few years ago. Because if he can get that kind of buy-in and commitment from a few seasons ago to this team, that's a dangerous unit. That's a team that can really make some noise, you know, come late in the season.
Well, along those lines, that's what we'll do next, gentlemen, is we'll get your thoughts on who should be on the first and second power play and the penalty kill, given the roster they have. Only Connor Hellebuyck yet to sign for the upcoming season. It's the Royal Sports Power Hour, and it's the Big Show on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Pick your official TSN 1290 discount golf card up today. Hit the greens throughout the summer for a great 2-for-1 deals in a multitude of Manitoba golf courses, including Granite Hills Golf Club, Selkirk Golf and Country Club, as well as the Meadows Golf and Country Club, Larders at St. Andrews Golf and Country Club, Minnewasta Golf and Country Club, and the Winkler Centennial Golf Course, just to name a few. Book a tee time and show your card for great rates. Cards are only $34.95 each. Some restrictions apply. To purchase your card and for a complete list of participating courses, visit tsn1290.ca. The Big Show, Jim, Troy, and Brandon on the Royal Sports Power Hour. And gentlemen, yesterday we gave our predicted lines coming out of training camp for the Winnipeg Jets. Let's do the power play and penalty kill. Hotly debated last year, given the manpower that was chosen to be where and also the effectiveness of the man advantage. We'll do the first two units. Who do you like on the first power play this season?
First team power play for me will be Dustin Byfuglien in front of the net. In the 1-3-1, he'll be the top, the one. Then line A on line A Island, and I don't care what he says, or that's his spot, period. Shifley in the middle, Ehlers on the right, and Trouba up top playing point guard and distributing.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, if I could have five lineys out there, I would. But if you put line A on the left side there, one-timer, I almost wouldn't even care what else the Jets did. As long as they kind of make Liney the focus of their power play. So that to me is first and foremost, and I really hope it's not a debate. I really hope it's not something we talk about multiple times during the season, because you have one of the premier weapons in the NHL. And I don't care what his age is, but his shot is already elite when it comes to NHL snipers. So Liney has to be there. What would you guys think about this? Because there was an interesting interview from Todd Nelson, who's the coach of the Grand Rapids Griffins in the AHL, and they had the top power play last year, and they've had a top power play for a while now, and it was at 26% for most of the season, and it fell back a little bit and finished 24.5. But he has five forwards out there, and they're not afraid to run a five-man unit without any defenders. And the reason I kind of bring that up is because when did the power play of the Jets kind of take off at the end of the year? It was when Blake Wheeler was up at the top, kind of manning the power play from the point, which didn't sound like it would work on paper, but he was effective. He was really good in that spot. So I just kind of wonder if, you know, I don't know if you go five forwards, or I don't know how you work it there, but do you give maybe a chance with Wheeler up at the top and kind of trust him to maybe be more of a playmaker and a facilitator, a guy that, you know, who can get a shot through if needed, but would maybe more so be pass first and willing to set up Patrick Laine on his island there?
I'm not. It's a little, if there's any breakdowns and we got Wheeler skating backwards on a potential 2-on-1 type situation or whoever's going to be out there as a forward, I don't want that. I don't want anything to do with that.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, it's weird about what worked well with Wheeler on the point was he doesn't have the most dynamic shot, but yet he scored a couple goals from the point. Like he, you know, and when I mean shot dynamic, he doesn't have that hammer of a bullet like Trouba or Byfuglien or somebody does. So I don't, I wouldn't. I would have a defenseman out there. And on my number one power play, I got Dustin Byfuglien. And if they play the diamond again, Dustin Byfuglien, I got Shifley, Wheeler, Ehlers, and Laine on the first power play unit.
You mean the 1-3-1, right? Yep.
Yeah, and the
Who do you? What's your Buff is where?
On the point.
Okay.
And then on the second power play, I have Lowry, Little, Connor, Perreault, and Trouba. And I'm hashtagging Trouba Morrissey because having watched him in the American Hockey League and know of his junior career, I don't know if it's going to happen this year, but eventually in his career, Josh Morrissey is going to be on the power play. So one of those two guys on the second unit.
Dustin Byfuglien on the point on the power play doesn't work to me. The bombs that I don't know that he's selective enough when he sends the puck to the net. Typically, you know, the high blast that he'll send in. I just don't like. You do not want him carrying the puck up ever, and B, what he does with the puck on the point. I think you look at the Jets' power play and it has been underproductive with him as a quarterback of it since arrival. I don't want him out there in that role. I don't want him QBing the power play.
I think especially with if you're having Lining on that first unit. Like I'd be more comfortable with having Trouba there and maybe being a bit more deferential. Because like you just wonder if Byfuglien can ease up on the trigger happiness, mm-hmm. right? Where he's been for years now, he's been the centerpiece of the power play. Where it was get it to Byfuglien, either a one-timer or his shot through the point, and that was it. So, I mean, if he's willing to change his mindset when it comes there, I'd have no problem with it. But I'm just a little hesitant believing that, you know, a 32, 33-year-old defenseman is going to change his stripes and learn some new tricks.
To me, if Buff's on the point on the power play, the guys in front of the net creating traffic shouldn't be concerned about having to duck. They should be looking to tip in something coming in from the point, and Buff just is not that selective in how he sends the puck to the net.
I don't know how you have a power play first or second unit without Dustin Byfuglien on.
I got Byfuglien there, and he's standing in front of the net, wreaking incredible havoc. And, you know, he can get behind the net. That whole area around, draw a circle around the goal, that is Dustin Byfuglien's domain on the power play.
So, sorry, who's your first power play, Byfuglien?
Byfuglien in at the top, so like in front of the net, where Lowry was last year. Laine, Scheifele, Ehlers, and Trouba on top.
I would have to give me a little second here, but I'd give five forwards. I know you guys are risk averse and terrified of anything terrible ever happening, and that's why you'll never be coaches. I'm kidding, obviously.
I'm not opposed to it,
but I don't know. It is forward thinking and it is out there, but I'm not necessarily worried about what could happen if the puck goes the other way, because if everything goes according to plan, you know, we're keeping that puck in. And I'm thinking offense instead of defense when it comes to the power play. So
are you getting much more offense from that specific position on the ice than what a Trouba or a Myers or pick your D-man could give you? Dishing it off?
That's a fair point, but just going off what I saw last season, Blake Wheeler, I think, at the point worked out better than Dustin Byfuglien. Now, maybe Trouba could take that mantle. So I guess if I had to pick between Trouba, Byfuglien, Wheeler, I'd probably opt for Trouba or Wheeler, but I'd give the five forward thing a shot for sure.
We'll get back into this later on this hour as well, because we have to take a break, but the penalty kill is instrumental too on who I have penalty killing. I have Jacob Trouba penalty killing, so I don't know how much time I want him doing both, but we'll get into that when we come back. But first, Bob Weeks on the open on The Big Show next, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to support the fifth and final HSC Foundation Celebrity Human Race. It's your chance to race around Winnipeg competing in challenges and puzzles with your team's celebrity. September 22nd and 23rd, the money raised allows the HSC Foundation to improve care for Manitoba families with research initiatives, cutting-edge medical equipment, state-of-the-art facilities. To learn more or to register, visit tsn1290.ca. Jim Tolt, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you on the Royal Sports Power Hour on The Big Show. TSN 1290. We'll get into the PK in our NHL news and notes for the Jets and continue our discussion on potential power plays for the team coming up as well. But the Open gets underway early, early tomorrow morning if you're in Canada. And, of course, it is at the Royal Birkdale, the 146th Open. And we welcome in senior reporter and golf analyst for TSN, Bob Weeks, who is there live. How are you, Bob?
I'm doing very well. How are you guys?
Very well, thank you. Lots to talk about around the Open, as always. But first of all, just break down the course for us, if you can, the Royal Birkdale and the overall challenges it presents, especially this year.
Well, it's obviously a links golf course, so it's subjected to lots of wind, generally speaking. It's probably the fairest of the links golf courses that they use for the Open Championship. The fairways are generally pretty flat, which is something you don't see at links golf courses. Mostly it's sort of humpy and bumpy, and it leads to sort of unfair bounces here and there. But this one's a little fair. There's definitely some teeth in it. We're expecting some weather to roll in starting perhaps Friday. So I think there'll be lots of challenges. It's not going to be an easy test by any means. And the last couple of holes especially will provide a good test for the guys as they try to lift that claret jug. But it's another great golf course in the rotation. Jordan Spieth has said this morning he put it in probably one of his top two or three of the ones they use for the ranking.
Please tell us what you know about the young Canadian Austin Conley in his first Open, and also a bit of a good buddy of Jordan Spieth, a real neat storyline.
So Austin Conley is a Canadian playing for Canada. He's got dual citizenship. He actually grew up in Texas, played at the same club as Jordan Spieth. But his dad's from Toronto. His grandparents are from Nova Scotia. So every summer, the family would pack up and they'd spend the summer out in Nova Scotia, which is, in a lot of cases, where he honed his game. But he also, of course, played a lot with Jordan Spieth growing up in that same area and a lot of the guys down in Texas. When he was about 15 or 16, he elected to play for Canada, which you can make a choice as to which country you want to play for. And, of course, in the United States, he would have been another good young player, whereas in Canada, he, because of the limited number that we have up here, he was one of the really good ones. So he played for Canada in a number of international competitions, including the Pan Am Games, and he is playing over here in Europe now full time this season. He's just a young guy, 20 years old, decided not to go to school at college in the States and went right to the professional ranks. So he's playing on what's basically the junior circuit of the European Tour. It's called the Challenge Tour, and they play in some wild and woolly places. Kazakhstan, for example, has a tournament on this tour. So he's played very well, though, and he qualified here by going into one of the local qualifiers and making it through. And he's not afraid. Jordan Spieth said this guy will wear out the middle of the fairway. So we'll see what he can produce when the gun goes off on Thursday morning.
Bob, the Open historically, as you know, and we all know that are fans of the game and watch it, has had the familiar big names win it, and it's had some guys literally make their name at this one. Where do you think this one goes? Who are some of the guys that you think that people are well-known, have a shot at this, and then maybe a name or two that might actually make a name for themselves at this year's Open?
It's always interesting because you're right. You do see some sort of well-known names and some unusual ones that come through, and this year, I don't know if there's a real clear favorite coming in here. You can't even point to, Dustin Johnson or Rory McIlroy or Jason Day or Jordan Spieth and say, yep, that's the one guy I think is going to win, because all of them are coming in with some question marks, whether it's missing cuts or recent form or injuries. So there's all little things going on with those big guys. I still perhaps would like to see what Dustin Johnson can do. I think Rory McIlroy is not far away if you believe him. I think one of the guys you might hear from before the week is done is a European player by the name of Tommy Fleetwood. He finished fourth at the U.S. Open, and he is from right around here in Southport where we are. As a kid, he used to sneak onto this golf course to try and play a few holes because he wasn't a member. But he's the top player in Europe this year, and he won in France just a few weeks ago. So that's a name you might hear a little bit of. I think Ian Poulter is a guy who has sort of been overlooked a little bit. He had a slow start after coming off an injury last year, has picked up some steam lately, has runner-up finishes in the Open as well. So there's a few guys out here who can make a name. But as you say, expect the unexpected, because some guy might just try to jump up here like a Ben Curtis or a Todd Hamilton and show that they can win and surprise a lot of people.
Rory has missed three of his last four cuts and will be toting around a one iron for his time out there. Your thoughts, are you believing him that his game is at a good spot, or are you concerned with where he's at?
No, I think the biggest issue for Rory is just that he hasn't played a lot because the injury has limited his time. So I think, you know, the putting is a little bit of an issue. He seems to think it's cleared up. He's settled on a putter at least. He had the Travelers Championship. He used three different putters in the last three rounds, which was a little surprising. So I think of, you know, his bad rounds lately, although he hasn't made the cut in some of those, I think the bad rounds haven't been quite as bad as he gets closer to the Open Championship last week at the Scottish and the week before at the Irish. So he might be the one that would stand out from that group. But as you say, you know, the other factor that we haven't really discussed can be the weather, which can really turn things around. If you get on the bad side of the draw, if you have you play in the afternoon when the heavens open up and the winds rage, compared to a guy who's playing in sunny still conditions in the morning, you know, you can't even expect those two guys to be thinking about playing the same golf course. So that'll have a big impact on it as well.
It's going to be so interesting to me, given the conditions and everything else. So what are the chances that a Canadian does this, especially Adam Hadwin?
How well does
Adam play in these conditions, in your mind?
Well, that's going to be a bit of a question mark, because Adam has never played Lynx golf before this week. B, has never played the Open Championship, obviously. And C, this is his first time across the pond. So he's doing a lot of cramming. Having said that, talking with him and watching him yesterday practice some short game stuff, you know, bump and run shots and different techniques that he might have to use here that he wouldn't normally use in PGA Tour golf, I think he's feeling comfortable. He's kind of embracing the challenge to it. He's played very, very well this year. He's gone in spurts. He did say that the recent kind of lull in his game was that after the great start, he just kind of expected he would play perfect golf all year long. And, you know, that 59 and the tour win are great, but you just can't expect to do that. So he's taken a new, fresh attitude this week. He's just going to go out. He's going to enjoy himself. He's going to compete and have fun, but not try to put too much pressure on himself. And sometimes that's a good way to start to play better, even though it seems a little odd. Listen, when he's putting well, which he has done for most of this year, he's probably one of the top 10 putters in the world. So if you can get that short stick going, that'll help him a lot.
Sergio's got the Open this week, his wedding next week. You look at the last 3 years, tied for second, tied for sixth, tied for fifth. He's always seems to be sniffing around the claret jug with that no major gorilla lifted off his back, Bob. Does he have a legitimate shot?
Well, sure. I think he's playing with house money after having won the Masters and the Green Jacket. You know, he's all those years of being asked when he was going to win a major. Now he doesn't have to answer those questions anymore. The only question for me is going to be whether or not he's going to be too busy, you know, ordering table place settings and the wedding photographer rather than focusing on his game. He says it's well in hand, but I truly think that if there was one major that Sergio was going to win, it was probably be this one before the Masters. I think this one, as the results you mentioned show, that he's got a game that's tailor-made for this kind of golf and this kind of conditions that he might face. So it would be a nice wedding present, I'm sure, to walk in with the green jacket and the claret jug next week to his wedding ceremony. But I wouldn't put it past him for winning. He's a legitimate chance to win this thing.
What does one look forward to more, your wedding or playing in the Open?
That's a loaded question to ask a guy. You know that.
I'll leave the analysis for that to somebody else, Bob. Senior reporter and golf analyst for TSN, Bob Weeks, joining us live from Birkdale's. The 146th Open gets underway. Talk a little bit about Jason Day and what he's gone through and where he's at.
Jason's had an interesting year. I asked him just literally half an hour ago in the press conference. I asked him how, if he was to sum up this year at everything that's happened on and off the golf course, how would he describe it? And he said, happy and disappointed, which is sort of a real conflux of terms. But, you know, he went through a bit of a battle with his mom, who had cancer, brought her over here to the States, and they're over to the States, I should say, not in the States, brought her to the States, and they had some medical treatment, and she's much better. His game has really lapsed, though. He said, you know, just perhaps not paying attention to it or getting a little distracted, and understandably so. Has led to some delays. Someone, you know, he said 2 years ago he was hitting it long and straight off the tee. He was hitting really crisp irons, and he was holding everything that he could with the putter. It just seemed to be flowing in on the big cup. Now he says he's hitting it short and crooked. He can't get his irons on line, and he can't sink a putt. So I'm not expecting huge things from him this week. He got in here Monday, played a practice around Tuesday, and has really, to me, is not really kind of got a great track record in terms of playing at this tournament. He's had a couple of good finishes, but not overall. So I don't expect too much from him. Having said that, you know, maybe this is like what we said with Adam Hadwin. Maybe the fact that he's not really giving himself the full deal here to get prepped for it and everything might be just the turnaround that he needs. He'll certainly be fresh when he steps onto the tee tomorrow afternoon.
Well, certainly a whole bunch of the allure of the British Open is some of the nasty, snarly weather we can see. What is in store for us over the next 4 days regarding potential weather?
On Thursday, it looks like it's going to be a pretty decent day. Just some breezes, nothing out of the ordinary. I guess when I say breezes, I mean, you know, some gusts that will buffet over the golf course here. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, though, that looks like there's some weather coming in, more of what we are sort of used to seeing at the Open Championship, some rain, some heavier winds, some heavier rain, maybe some hail and locusts, too. I don't know. We'll see what happens here when you get to the Open Championship. You got to be prepared for everything. But that's part of the allure of this tournament, I think. So it would be a little bit disappointing to me if there wasn't some weather, if there weren't umbrellas up and the guys snap put on their rain gear and battle through a little bit. You just hope that you're on the right side of the draw when that does happen, that maybe you play in the morning when it's calm and the other guys play in the nasty stuff in the afternoon. But Friday, Saturday, Sunday looks like we're going to see it. And it's of course, it's great if you're sitting on your couch back home in Canada and watching it. That's the best way to take in the bad weather.
It's going to be outstanding that way, Bob, especially for us Winnipeggers who know what wind is all about, for sure. Really appreciate your time, Bob. Great insight, as always. Enjoy the Open, and we'll talk to you real soon.
Sounds good. Take care, guys. Enjoy everybody. And everybody in Winnipeg.
Thanks so much, Bob.
Bob Weeks, once again, at Bob Weeks at TSN. The whole Rory adding a 16-degree one-iron to his bag is very interesting. And
Phil not carrying a driver?
No, not a driver at
all. They're saying like the long hitting comes into play so important, and all the other majors here, it's just not. This isn't the way this course is set up.
As somebody who doesn't use his driver well, I wonder how I would play the Open. I don't use my irons well either, though. So
I get a feeling those greens would. I'm going to predict a knee taken on about the second green, crying for help.
Who do you guys like in this?
I think Sergio goes and gets it done. I'm going to Sergio and Rahm.
I think Sergio's like, El Nino. I think Sergio's a great pick. I've been wrestling with this all week. I think Tommy Fleetwood's getting a bit too much hype for me. You know, for a guy who's playing great but not really well established. At Royal Birkdale, it's kind of always been Hall of Fame talent that's won there. Like, there hasn't really been, you know, a player, you know, outside, I think, of Ian Baker Finch, who hasn't been, you know, one of the greats that's won there. So I think I'm going to go in that mold, and I'm going to say Justin Rose finishes close, but I'll take Hideki Matsuyama. I think he gets his first major, and that would be the eighth straight first-time major winner in golf right now.
Oh, I was going to take that pick, Matsuyama. I've told you guys before, I'm in that pool where you pick three top 10 guys, three out of the top 10 guys. Matsuyama was one of my picks. I think Jordan Spieth is going to bounce back here and put up some good numbers. And I like Rose as well.
Just because Wicks picks it doesn't mean you shouldn't pick it.
Yeah.
Jump on the bandwagon,
baby.
That's
your guy. That's your guy, man.
That's true. Matsuyama. I'll go with him. There we go. Matsuyama. The Open, of course, starts early tomorrow morning. And during the big show, we'll keep you up to date throughout the next 2 days as well. And, of course, you can take it in on TSN and TSN.ca. We'll take a break. NHL news and notes and the penalty kill and continue to talk on the power play as well for the Jets. This is the big show on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and the Walt Morris Group of Companies, including Winnipeg Dodge, present the first ever TSN 1290 Golf for Kids Classic Tuesday, August 15th at Southwood Golf and Country Club.
This is a Texas Scramble Best Ball Tournament with proceeds to benefit the Children's Hospital Foundation of Manitoba and Kids Sport Manitoba. Registration is $150 per person, or if you have a foursome, it's only $500. Includes 18 holes of golf, cart rental, pre- and post-game buffet-style food and drink, freebies, plus chances to win cool prizes, and there's also lots of fun planned at select holes throughout the course, hosted by our good friends at Abalone Foundation Repair, Star Building Supplies, United Firefighters of Winnipeg, Local 867, the Viscount Gort Hotel, FXR Adrenaline Unlimited, Mr. Lube, Ashley Furniture, Windeck Limited, Darcy Bain Physiotherapy, J&M Window and Door Company, Santa Lucia Pizza, Royal Sports, and The Pint Winnipeg. Space, once again, is limited and available on a first-come, first-served basis. There are a few spots left. Register now at tsn1290.ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon on the Royal Sports Power Hour, TSN 1290's big show. And a reminder to people, there is 11 a.m. baseball today at Shaw Park. Winnipeg Gold Eyes, St. Paul Saints, if you want to get out there and take that in. I was there on the weekend. Outstanding game. That is going down as one of the most historic games in Gold Eyes history. I don't know about independent baseball, but that... The Gold Eyes catcher couldn't throw to home, but he threw a guy out at second. So he had to be pulled in like the sixth inning because his arm just got worse. Relief pitcher came in for the Kansas City T-Bones. A right-hander who threw 105 pitches 2 days before, threw left-handed. Wild pitch is how they won it. They went to the ninth, up by two. A home run with two outs and two strikes against, tied it. And then they each got two more runs before it was actually decided in the 14th. Outstanding.
Mike McIntyre has a great account of the entirety of the process that you, if you haven't seen yet, go find him on Twitter and read it. Or take it in. It's awesome.
You're right. Just nails it there. NHL news and notes time, guys. But let's continue with the power play. Just anything more on the power play and the five forwards you want to go with? And I don't have a problem with that, actually, if it works. If you have somebody who – I agree with your thoughts on – You know, you don't want to turn the puck over. You don't want to think defense when you're on the power play, clearly. But if it works, I don't mind Matthew Perreault out there on the point either.
I'm surprised Wicks, you know, as a forward, yes, isn't going with six forwards.
Do you need a goalie?
Yeah. To hell with all the D and all the goalies.
If you're giving up a 2-on-1, it's probably in the back of the net anyway. So, I mean, at that point, why not just make sure you keep it in?
Oh, my goodness.
Any more thoughts from either of you on the power play, or should we just get into the penalty kill? Who you want to see out there in the PK?
Well, I think PK is more important this year.
All right, let's do it. Who do you like on the power or the PK? I guess we'll just go two units. Doesn't matter first or second. But
all right. Well, my top defensive pairing for the PK is Morrissey and Trouba, and then my second is going to be Kulikov and Myers. And a little part of me, because I'm going to emphasize Kulikov and Myers on my second PK unit, makes me want to go with them as a defensive pairing and go with Enstrom and Buff 5-on-5. So I wonder how that whole thing's managed, because I want Kulikov and Myers fantastically working together on that second PK. And then note that I don't, and I know it's a stretch because he averaged a whole bunch of minutes on the power play last year in .256 of total ice time per game power play. So I know this doesn't come to fruition, but I don't have Wheeler on either of my power plays.
Penalty kill.
On my power play. I got him on my penalty kill, though. So I got,
you don't have him even on the second power play.
No, I got Lowry with Armia on the left, Little in the middle, Connor on the right, Enstrom on top of it. And really emphasizing time on that first power play. But anyways, getting back to the PK, I'm emphasizing the PK this year. The PK has to be spectacular. And for me to suffocate opposing power plays, taking away time and space, I need speed out there. I need guys that are fantastic with their sticks. And so I'm going to go my first forward grouping for the penalty kill is going to be Wheeler and Armia. And then my second will be Perreault and Kopp. And I've got Little dangling around there as well to make a fairly solid contribution. And, you know, a guy like Little last year was on the ice for over a minute in shorthanded situations and that sort of thing. And when you're talking about, we've touched on this before, when we talk about emphasizing your elite players on the penalty kill, look no further than the Boston Bruins, who had the premier penalty kill last year. Patrice Bergeron on the ice for .209 the average penalty kill, and a guy like Brad Marchand on for 153. The speed, the skill, the brain, I want all of that on the PK. Don't show me guys that are slowish, don't have your lower-end talent a la Mark Stewart putting all that time on the PK sort of thing. We need a bunch of skill and talent out there to kill these suckers.
Yeah, not a bunch of time here, but I get your kind of sentiment of the PK being high leverage, which it is right now. That's kind of it's those moments you want to limit those goals against, and I think you do that by having the best players out there on the ice for your team. I think that mindset has to shift a little bit. So I have Blake Wheeler playing a ton. I'd be okay with Scheifele as well being out there with Wheeler, but for me, Scheifele, Little, however you want to slot those guys around, I'd be okay with. But I think Blake Wheeler is one of the best penalty killing forwards in the entire NHL. And then my second line, Lowry and Armia. I think Lowry can be a great penalty killer, and we've seen Armia kind of a shorthanded goal specialist for this team. So I think if you have those two, or those two kind of setups as your forward crew, I think you're doing all right if you're the Jets. It might be more of a mindset shift in how you attack the penalty kill as opposed to who's necessarily out there.
My only concern with Lowry Armia is maybe speed.
Yep.
Yeah.
I like Perreault on the penalty kill.
Yeah, he's always real nifty. His stick is brilliant out there on the PK.
And I think Kopp takes a bigger role. I like Armia. Wheeler, I don't mind putting him out there, but I'd rather focus him on the power play. And I have him on the power play, the first unit power play, actually. Is where I'm playing Blake Wheeler. And I like any combination of Trouba, Morrissey, Kulikov, and Myers killing penalties in whatever combination you want to throw them out there, or, you know, first, second, that way. So we'll take a break on the Big Show. We're out of time for this segment, but up next, Gus Katsaros talks hockey with us on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Leave the back gate unlocked because TSN 1290 is coming over and select evenings throughout the summer. TSN 1290 will back up the truck with a portable party for up to 25 people, including catering by Qdoba Mexican Eats, including a burrito bowl hot bar with tortillas so you can make tacos and an abundance of three cheese queso, beverages including a sampling of Tall Grass Vodka, Winnipeg's only grain-to-bottle vodka produced by Capital K Distillery, a family pack of fireworks to light up your night, courtesy of Archangel Fireworks, an iGrill 2 digital app connected thermometer for each grand prize winner as well, provided by Lux Barbecue Company, and a hot tub for you to soak in over the course of 1 week, provided by our friends at Oasis Leisure Center. We'll also have TSN 1290 crew on site to help serve and set up. Parties will happen Thursday evenings from now until August, including August 10th, and this Thursday, July 20th. And this Thursday, July the 20th, we are going to none other than, drum roll please, Dave Lambert. Dave Lambert, we're coming over tomorrow night to host the TSN 1290 backyard party. To enter online for our August draw, go to tsn1290.ca and we could be seeing you very soon. Jim, Troy, and Brandon on the Big Show, 6 minutes past the hour, an hour away from the Boss Pizza fan line. Lots to get to today, including is poker a sport? Is it Slapshot or Bull Durham?
That's a tough first round matchup, man. Bull Durham is one heck of a film.
Oh, interesting, interesting times.
Might be the best baseball film, huh?
Yeah. There have been some good baseball
that
films.
That one, I like Moneyball. I know it's recent, but I think those are my top two.
Moneyball.
I got to go with the minor, like, in the very similar fashion to Slapshot, right, where it gives you the real inside sort of, like, the fun back and forth of guys toiling, and that's sort of, like, that's what's so wonderful about Bull Durham to me. And same with Slapshot, right? That's the real hook for me. So you can take your Moneyball, mister. Stick it.
Best part of Moneyball is when he was talking to David Justice. And David Justice was mad they had to pay for Pop, and he was mad that they were in Oakland. He was all about himself.
I'm not paying you.
And he said, you're paying me $7 million. I goes, I'm not. He goes, the Yankees are paying you $4 million not to play for them. Like, do you want to keep playing and have a career? Or great stuff there. But Bull Durham for sure in Slapshot. Gus Katsaros from McKeensHockey.com is joining us. Gus, we were talking about a poll today where they're going to narrow down the best sports movies. And in the first bracket, it doesn't seem fair, but Bull Durham versus Slapshot. What do you think?
Wow, what a matchup right off the bat. I think that Troy was kind of right. I like that minor league feel that kind of comes along with both teams, which kind of gives you that sense of, you know, somebody working towards accomplishing something. Now, obviously, I'm going to pick Slapshot simply because of the hockey angle, but it was difficult. Bull Durham was a very good movie.
Gus, is it hard to imagine? I've seen through your tweets, you're asking the question, is more or less, is it hard to imagine San Jose missing the playoffs? And then you leave and look at a team like Los Angeles where there's some interesting questions with their team speed and all the rest of it. Is it hard for you to imagine a scenario where five teams from the Central make the playoffs this year?
Absolutely, it could be. I mean, what you're seeing on the West Coast there is not the same two teams, the contending Stanley Cup, Stanley Cup contender in the Kings and a powerhouse in the Sharks. Somehow I think that with the loss of Marleau, you know, the scoring that was there a couple of years ago has kind of dissipated a bit. I mean, we can lavish over Brent Burns and you know, the ageless wonder of Joe Thornton, but San Jose just doesn't seem to be the very same team that they were. And if they can't find scoring consistency and if their power play is just as struggles just as much as it did last year, they're going to miss the playoffs. With the Kings, it's probably something similar. Unless they change their way and figure out methods to get pucks into the middle and to start scoring goals from the dangerous areas, they're in the danger of missing the playoffs too. So, you know, that kind of gives teams like Winnipeg and St. Louis and every team in the Central the ability to kind of leapfrog, especially if they could steal some valuable points out of all of these West Coast teams. It's a distinct possibility. You could see a lot of Central, if not all the Central teams in the playoffs.
I've said I could see the Chicago Blackhawks not making the playoffs this year. What are your thoughts on the Blackhawks and the changes they've made and their overall depth compared to years past?
Yeah, you know, I don't think that very much has changed from the previous year. In fact, you could even think, you know, taking Mariehosa away. Brandon Saad is not Artemi Panarin. Patrick Kane isn't going to have him as a winger anymore. Jonathan Toews is likely going to slot in with Brandon Saad. There's a lot of fluid kind of movement up in the Chicago, let's just call it top nine, that if the Stars, and it's similar to last year, if that core doesn't step up and do its job, there's a very distinct possibility they don't make the playoffs. And if goaltending doesn't step up to the degree that it has over the last couple of seasons, that kind of masks some of the deficiencies, Chicago is a distinct possibility to miss the playoffs in the Central.
Gus, Colton Parayko has been an absolute workhorse and maybe a bit of a surprise here for the St. Louis Blues over the last couple of years, averaging over 20 minutes a game, almost a half a point a game, and he's come out asking 1 year for $4.85 million. The Blues are offering him $7 million over 2 years. Are they making a big mistake not offering a long-term contract to him?
Well, I mean, these kind of were set for the arbitration process. So who's to say that they just don't go back to the drawing board while they let this kind of sizzle over in the public sphere to try to work out something long term? Obviously, you want to have a talent like Parayko for the long haul. I mean, there's so much that he brings to the table above and beyond just big size. Like, he's mobile and can contribute in all three zones. And while the Blues probably do want to probably lock them down for a very long period of time, I'm not really sure that they're going to end up doing that. I think that they might end up going to the arbitration process. I can't really justify that, but for some reason I feel that they're going in that direction. The best thing to do when you have this type of a talent, though, is to lock them up for as long as you possibly can.
I know they had a great run all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals and the Nashville Predators, but you know, they also just barely got into the playoffs. Are they better given what's transpired in Nashville this offseason, and what do you expect from them going into this season?
Well, I mean, they lose a little bit out of James Neal, but they'll end up graduating some players out of Milwaukee, like Pontus Ahlberg. And, you know, Austin Watson was a much better player, and Colton Sisson stepped up to the degree that they can I guess, jettison all the goals that James Neal would have scored and focus more on the defensive element. And what I felt with Nashville last season was they took half a season to rev. and having written them up just recently, what I felt was while they started to develop the game that we saw in the playoffs, that didn't it took a long time to finally put all those little components together. And it didn't really start to take effect until PK Subban came back from injury. Once he came back, the team changed. They shot more. They were more aggressive. They were more fluid from the back end. So what I think is you're going to see the second half of Nashville Predators and the playoff-style Predators. So I don't think that we're going to see any kind of a fall off or any like any big drop where Nashville's like out of the playoffs. I think that they'll be in the middle of the pack. They probably won't lead or anything, but they're not going to be the same first half team that they were last year. They're going to be very competitive.
Who has a more impactful year next year in the NHL, Gus Hischier or Patrick?
I think by sheer requirement, I think that Hischier probably has a more impactful. If we're going to judge what kind of the definition of impact is, if it's strictly scoring, well, yeah, maybe he'll outscore Patrick. If it's a matter of establishing one of them within their respective rosters and trying to figure out where they fit and how to build around them, should they become those key components, I think that Hischier probably comes up a little bit more than Nolan Patrick does. There's just such a component, the skill set in Hischier that's missing in New Jersey to the degree where Nolan Patrick is a little bit sheltered behind Giroux and some other star players. I feel that Hischier will have to do a lot more on his own to establish himself, which will give us an extra element to the optics of what he's actually brought to that organization.
Gus Katsaros from McKeensHockey.com joining us on the big show today, 13 minutes past the hour on TSN 1290. I know you don't talk goaltending much, but Connor Hellebuck's going to arbitration. And I shouldn't say you don't talk it. I know that that's not your specialty. We talk it a lot. But what do you think he gets in a contract going forward? And what do you think he deserves, I guess, more specifically?
From a compensation perspective?
Yeah, like he's filed for arbitration, and he's the last RFA for the Jets to sign. They have $8.9 million of cap room left, and $4 million of that is tied around bonuses with Ehlers and Laine, which I assume that those two are going to get. So I'm just wondering, like, given the situation, given the signing of Steve Mason, I have no doubt, you know, he filed for arbitration. I think that's the right process to do. But I'm just – we're trying to figure out as the weeks go on here just what he's looking for and what maybe he deserves and what the Jets should be offering.
Well, I'm really not sure as to what the value is. If you're asking kind of where I feel it would probably end up getting, probably somewhere in the $2 and $2.5 million range. I'm struggling to see him being the number one. I think that him and Steve Mason will end up fighting it out. I'm not really sure that contract will eventually come out there if one of the better goaltenders emerges, so be it. But not being able to fully appreciate the craft of goaltending, I feel that what he brings to the Jets is average goaltending. And if he's going to be an average goaltender, and if he's going to be an average potential backup goaltender in today's age and range, and where Winnipeg is right now, it's probably somewhere in the $2 to $2.5 million. And I still feel that Mason, while does have that potential, like, I mean, he came off pretty underrated, yet publicly overrated stint in Philadelphia. He, I think, will eventually emerge as the number one there, even if there's some type of a battle along the way between both those goaltenders.
All right, thanks very much, Gus. I like that. It's interesting. I mean, we're throwing out the numbers because it's team friendly at 1.5, but that makes more sense actually, 2 to 2.5, and we'll be very interested to see what they get done. At Cats Hockey on Twitter, Gus, always a pleasure. Thanks for doing this.
Pleasure is always mine. Thanks, guys, for having me.
Thanks so much, brother. Take care, man. Are you thinking the Preds are going to fall from grace to some degree?
No, I still think they're a playoff team. I just, like Gus made reference there, it took them so long to get it together last year, offensively. And so I'm wondering if... I don't think they fall out of the playoffs. I'm just wondering what to expect from them. Like, are they going to be a team that continues to do what they did throughout the playoffs and get 100 points? Or are they going to be the team that struggled to get in the playoffs again last year?
They came out of the gate so slow. And with the changes, I think that was really the big thing, right? It's hard to imagine with that back end just how brilliant it is that there's going to be any sort of a hiccup and that sort of thing.
And James Neal is gone, and even though, you know, Gus talked about the young players coming up, I mean, those young players are a lot like the Jets players when we talk about development. Like, how far have they developed, although good playoff runs, like, can over 82 games, how far have they developed consistency-wise and everything else? I think there's some legitimate questions around the Predators this year. Even though they went to the Stanley Cup Finals, I think that, you know, is Pekka Rinne going to return? to the form he had, and like they struggled to get in the playoffs.
Well, but they didn't struggle like they didn't. They weren't traveling in the direction to fall out of the playoffs. They were charging, surging into them, much more so. Right. So I don't know if to put weight on the first 20 or 40 games, instead of looking at the way that they played to wrap things up, and then certainly the level they were at. I mean, I'm concerned about maybe a finals loss hangover that you see a whole bunch of times, but boy, it's just hard to ignore the way that group came together for me.
At the start of last season, people had them winning the West, like being the number one team in the Western Conference.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they did eventually end up winning the West in a way. So, I mean, a lot of people were right. I mean, they signed Bonino. They improved offensively. Yemelin was added, I believe, to Nashville as well. So, you improve on the best defensive core in the game. It comes down to Pekka Rinne, as it usually does with Nashville. You know, a 34, 35-year-old goalie now. You know, can his hips hold up? Will he be as productive as he was through the first few rounds of the season? And if not, can UC Saros keep things maybe under wrap as the backup there? That's really the only thing I'm looking at that would lead me to believe that they don't make the playoffs, is the goaltending falters a bit.
I'm a big believer in UC Saros.
Yeah, you got more faith in Nashville goaltending or Jets goaltending? Hello?
Well, I never wrote Pekka Rinne off, and a lot of people did.
Well, he's healthy. I mean, there was some question with mostly related to his health, right? And by all accounts, he seems to be back to being in good health.
Again, I didn't bring it up because I think they're going to miss the playoffs. I just brought it up, like, what to expect this year. Everybody thought they'd be, you know, I thought Elliot Friedman said it best when they got in the playoffs. They're finally playing the way people expected them to play for the first 75 games. And they just started playing this way, you know, last 10 games of the regular season and then in the playoffs. Like, there was some high expectations for this team, and although they did go to the Stanley Cup Finals, it took them 60-plus games to get it going.
I don't know how that's a knock.
They weren't up to expectations. Like, what are you saying? You're saying they're the best team in the West?
No, I'm saying to pay any sort of to give any attention whatsoever to early struggles with fairly significant change to a group, put much weight on that, instead of what was accomplished over the last 40 games in the playoff run is borderline insanity
to
me.
You're saying they don't have the same regular season as they did last year?
I'll say that the Nashville Predators we witness upcoming will resemble much more so the team in the second half in the playoffs than the team in the first half last year.
We'll take a break and we'll hear more from offensive coordinator Paul Lapolice of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers when we come back to the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to present MTS Super Spike July 21st and 22nd at Maple Grove Rugby Park. Headliners on the concert stage this year include the Sam Roberts Band, the Lytics, the Treble, and more. Weekend passes for all shows are on sale now at superspike.ca, or keep listening to the Big Show this week for your chance to win tickets. All proceeds from this year's event go to Volleyball Manitoba, Kidsport Manitoba, and the True North Foundation. We have a pair of tickets right now to give away to this weekend's Super Spike, 780-1290, 780-1290. Two tickets to this weekend's Super Spike at Maple Grove Rugby Park, courtesy of us here at the Big Show, TSN 1290. Bombers head to BC tomorrow. They take on the Lions Friday night at 9. Minook Denture Blue Bomber game day coverage begins right here on TSN 1290 Friday night at 7. Yesterday, offensive coordinator Paul Lapolice spoke to the media, and he was asked about BC's defense as a unit, as a whole in general.
They're a talented unit. Defensively, they're fly around, they're physical. They've done a number on some of the offenses in the CFL. The games we've been watching, I thought they've really played well. They're stingy, they don't give up a lot of points, and they're physical. You know, and when you look at, they tackle well, their secondary is maybe the best secondary we faced, and they can come hit. And when they hit, they're in a bad mood, too. They're angry, so they're a good unit.
Thoughts on the BC defense this weekend?
Yeah, they're solid. The team's solid right across the board. It doesn't matter which angle or aspect you're looking at here. And you have to give them respect for reeling off three consecutive road wins. That just doesn't happen a whole lot in pro football. You're just not asked from a scheduling standpoint. That is so far away from the norm of what are asked of teams In my 18 years, never once were we ever three games on the road consecutive that I can ever recall. So it's just for them to pull that off was pretty impressive. A disappointing early loss to what is a very good team, surprising a lot of people, Edmonton out of the gate. And I just think they're in a real good place right now, the BC Lions. It's going to take the very best effort here from the Bombers. And similar to how they impressed everyone, they having allowing zero sacks and having zero turnovers, if they can pull that off again this week, of course, those being two of the biggest indicators of who wins games, they're going to have another great chance to win this game if they can play that cleanly again.
Paul Lapolis yesterday also talked about the BC Lions defense specifically in the red zone.
Yeah, it depends on the team you're facing, but certainly I know the BC Lions will do different things than they do regular field because I think some of the game changes from a play caller's perspective, so they want to handle the things they think that's going to come up. So you always have to be on top of that and make sure you're kind of ready with your counters.
That whole red zone thing, obviously so important, right? There's nothing – it's fantastic having the insurance policy of Justin Medlock, who's basically Mr. Automatic, but – boy, if you could put that ball into the end zone, that puts so much more stress on the opposing offense. You saw the Bombers do that when the Toronto Argonauts, who continued to struggle a great deal against the Bombers, they were 3 of 12 in the red zone coming into the game last week, Toronto was, and the Bombers kept Toronto out of the end zone while in the red zone as well, making the Argos go 0 for 3 in that game. And remember the first drive, the early drive in the third quarter, Toronto goes down the field and they have to settle on a field goal in that drive, and the Bombers go down and bam, bust through the red zone, put it in the end zone. And it's just when you're talking putting up threes or putting up sevens, it changes everything. It's a huge difference. So hey, if the Bombers can cause Bombers D can cause that Lions offense. Remember, the Argos kicked field goals from the line of scrimmage last week at 27, 27, 11, 11. Like it was pretty impressive. If you can put Travis Lule into that sort of a situation, then that will go a long way in helping to win this game. And the Bombers need to be effective again in the red zone, no doubt about it.
More on the Bombers next when Darren Bauming joins us on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Not Auto Corps present the Blue Bus. Before every Winnipeg Blue Bombers home game this season, we're taking W fans to Investors Group Field in our Not Auto Corps VIP Blue Bus. We'll pick you up and five buddies from a starting destination, drive you to the game, and when it's done, we'll take you back to wherever you started. Prizes include six tickets to an upcoming Blue Bomber home game and free transportation to and from. To enter, simply go to tsn1290.ca now. This is The Big Show, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon with you. And we're going to continue the talk on the Blue Bombers heading to BC to take on the Lions. They're 2-1. Of course, the Lions are 3-1. And you were mentioning that in the last segment. You've never seen three straight road games, especially
never.
For a team.
No, yeah. Never, ever. And, you understand it from a travel standpoint, BC – being all out east, in that sort of situation. But there's also a sort of an element of some sort of secondary league or just the NFL. I don't know. I guess BC Lions, it was a neat, interesting decision to make, right? Stay out there. And I certainly as a player, I would be all up for that. But boy, that's a lot of dough. If spending that much time out east and all the rest of it, holy cow, that's an expensive foray for a pro team to take.
I think it is smarter to stay out there, but like you say, to do that, that is a lot of cash.
Oh, yeah.
Going out to hotels, foods,
per
meals.
Per diem is huge, right across the board. It's quite shocking from an organization that it's not like BC's killing it with attendance or anything else like that, right?
It worked for the Lions, though, as they are 3-1 when they host the Bombers this Friday night. To talk about it, we welcome back in host of Manuk Dentcher Blue Bomber Game Day and, of course, CFL 60 Monday nights at 6. Mr. Darren Bauming, how are you?
Good morning, fellas. What's happening today?
Just another day here. Beautiful day at TSN 1290. Let's start with Kevin Fogg back at practice. Tell us the latest on him.
Yeah, he's running around there, and he's been relatively active over the last week and a half, but yesterday was the first day he was a full participant in practice and working with the DBs, and I didn't see him return too many kicks. And Mike O'Shea says he looks good. They're going to continue to evaluate him on a day-to-day basis. I personally don't think he will be ready to play this week. You know, injured in the first half, a lower body injury, back on July 1st in that season-opening overtime win over Saskatchewan. And, you know, I think they're just going to be a little bit more careful with him. They don't need him back as much as maybe they did, early in the season. The reality is Ryan Langford has done an excellent job returning kicks and returning punts. And the way that Brian Walker has been contributing on special teams on the cover units and as being that reserve defensive back, he's done a really good job. A lot of people were wondering how much leash Rock Carmichael would get at that defensive halfback spot. I thought he played a lot better against Toronto than he did in the first two games against Calgary and Saskatchewan. So no need to rush Kevin Fogg back. They know he can be a dynamic piece in the punt return game, give Ryan Langford a little bit more, rest as far as just handling the kick return duties. So I don't see them rushing Kevin Fogg back. They don't need him, so there's no need to.
Whether it's in the locker room or your chats with coaches, players, even hanging out with the media, watching practice and stuff, DB, I'm just wondering, what's the general feel for the switch that we saw in that game? That first half was scary with Ricky Ray tossing the pill for 243. S.J. Green was 5 receptions, 85 yards in that first half. And then he gets shut out in the second half. Ray gets held to 87 points. Has anyone talked to you a little bit about what happened at halftime?
You know, I haven't. That's interesting. It's something I haven't thought of myself, and we weren't talking about too much, in the locker room or amongst the media. What I do know is this team generally hasn't been very good at halftime adjustments. And I started asking Richie Hall yesterday about the aggressiveness in his defense. And, you know, I've had people suggest to me that the defense looks just more aggressive. They look like they're trying to accomplish some different things than they have under Richie Hall in years past. And, you know, he's not sure if it could be described that way, but he feels that, you know, they're trying some different things, that they're, you know, maybe taking a different approach than they have in years past. And it's working. Two sacks of Ricky Ray, that's one thing. But there was a lot of times where just the pocket was really squeezing in on the veteran quarterback, and that makes things difficult. He's not able to, you know, turn his hips, look to a different option as easily as he had in the past, and I thought it worked really well. That's something, you know, I think I'll maybe go back and look at, because that's an excellent point brought up by you, Troy, that, they did look a lot better in the second half than they did in the first. And in particular, you know, you'll hear it from me pretty much all week about the better starts that this Blue Bombers team needs. I thought the defense has handled the ebbs and flows of football games quite well. In particular, their last two games. Yes, they lost to Calgary, but they kept Bo Levi to just 22 points on offense, and then a good job against Ricky Ray. It's the Blue Bombers' offense with Matt Nichols at the controls. They need much better starts. No first downs, no points scored in first quarters this year. They have made good adjustments as well, getting enough points scored as the game has gone on, but they need to be better coming out of the gate, especially against a very, very powerful and dynamic offense in BC.
Yeah, and speaking of that, Darren, as we were talking about throughout this morning, we heard from Richie Hall. We just heard from offensive coordinator Paul Eppelise. Let's start with the Bomber defense. What needs to get done against the Travis Lule-led offense, especially on the road this weekend?
Well, I'll say this. Travis Lule came off the bench, and he looked excellent. What do you have, 439 passing yards? It broke a CFL record for, you know, most passing yards by a quarterback coming off of the bench. But he was up against a Hamilton Tiger Cats defense that, you know, has allowed a crazy amount of passing yards against this year. And they haven't even faced the top quarterbacks in the league. They haven't seen too much of Jonathan Jennings. They haven't seen, Bo Levi Mitchell. It's quite astounding the fall off that this Hamilton Tiger Cats defense has seen this year. Coming into the year, The big questions were, who's going to be the kicker? And what, is Zach Collaros going to be able to return to form of how he played at a super high level over the last number of seasons prior to his major ACL injury? This year, we're starting to talk about why this, you know, the play calling on offense and the controversy around that with Kent Austin, and then defense and why they're allowing so many yards. I think Travis Lule is going to have a much different challenge going against a Blue Bombers team that has been, you know, pressuring quarterbacks extremely well and a defensive secondary that takes the ball away. That's what I watch for. Travis Lule is extremely capable, and you know, we've heard a little bit of him on TSN 1290. You know, he joined the afternoon ride yesterday. He's an extremely confident quarterback, a former MOP. You can never count a guy like that out, and somebody, I don't think anybody in the league could say a bad word about the individual. He's a very, you know, high-character man. But I think his hands will be full against Winnipeg and, you know, forcing turnovers. He threw, you know, he threw more than one interception against the Hamilton Tiger Cats. He could do that easily once again against this ball-hawking Blue Bombers secondary.
It makes me wonder, seeing how the Winnipeg Blue Bombers are going a little bit more out of their way defensively to apply pressure, makes me really wonder how much Mike O'Shea was in the ear of Richie Hall to get him to unleash the defensive front a little bit more than that. Can we maybe touch on the brilliance of Paul Lapolis and his play calling in that game against the Argos DB? Another time we see where there's an opponent for the Bombers that looks like they've got a very dangerous situation defensively for the Bombers O-line and quarterback to deal with as far as push and sacks go. And to pull off a clean sheet there, it was great what Matt Nichols did and the O-line, but it all starts with the play calling involved.
I couldn't agree more. You know, I spoke to Paul Lapolis yesterday. If you guys got a chance to hear that conversation, I spoke to him off microphone as well. And just, you know, about, you know, some of the creativity and some of the things that he wants to accomplish, you know, in football games and with this Blue Bombers offense. Yes, Matt Nichols threw for a season low passing total, you know, in the mid 200 yard range. In that win over Toronto, but it was enough to get the job done. They utilized Andrew Harris. They utilized the run game. He ran extremely hard. I think he's one of the most impressive players in the league right now, just with the determination and grit and fire that he brings every time he gets his hands on the football. Yes, they need to be more effective on in the red zone. They need to get better starts, but it just seems like Paul Lapolis is very comfortable in his own skin right now. He's utilizing the tools he has. He's utilizing Weston Dressler and Andrew Harris, as I mentioned. And I find, you know, even with Bob Wiley back in the National Football League with the Cleveland Browns, the mark that he has left and the tools and the system that he has given, he has kind of passed down and grandfathered down to Marty Costello, the new offensive line coach, who's back for another season here in Winnipeg and now taking over in a, you know, in the full role of running the offensive line. The protection, you know, both just the protection and the amount of time and ease at which this Blue Bombers offense can operate because of the way they're able to shut down opposing pass rushers. I thought they did a great job against a banged-up Calgary Stampeders pass rush. And then Victor Butler and Sean Lemon, two guys that were a big part of why Toronto had 14 sacks in the first three games of the season. To get a clean sheet against them, to give Matt Nichols enough time to operate and get everybody involved and win that football game, I think it spoke volumes. BC is a different beast. They bring pressure in different ways. We know they have the best middle linebacker in the game in Solomon Elamimium. They have some of, you know, very, very talented secondary. I think that'll be the biggest challenge for Matt Nichols in stretching the field and just a lot of athletes. But I feel that, you know, Paul Lapolis, when given time to prepare, and he's seen a lot of this BC Lions team with three late season matchups last season and getting them early again this year, it's going to be, you know, a time for Paul Lapolis and this Blue Bombers offense to go to work and to eat.
Darren Bauman from Manuk Denture Blue Bomber Game Day. Of course, CFL 60 Monday nights at 6 right here on TSN 1290. Joining us to talk Bombers and Lions on the big show at TSN 1290. Darren, I guess heading into this one, any talk about last year's playoff game between the – I know you haven't talked to the Lions yet, but any talk between the Bombers about last year's playoff game?
Well, it's funny. You know, before I'll generally start an interview with players, I'll kind of just have a casual conversation with them. I find it brings them down to a more human level, and they don't feel so – like processed as far as speaking with the media. And, you know, I'll bring it up with guys. I'll mention, you know, like, oh, you know, you got a chance to go back into Vancouver and get some redemption. And they're not overly vocal about it, but you can see it in their eyes. You can see it in the expression in their faces. They want to win in BC. They want to beat this team, and they don't want to do it by, you know, a couple points. Michael Shea will say at the end of the game, all that matters is that they have one more point than the other team, and they come away with the W. That's all they record in the record books, you know, down in the future. How many wins did this team have? But you can tell this Blue Bombers team, you know, they beat BC by 2 points. They beat them by 3 points, and then they lost in the playoffs by 1 point. That was their three matchups this, you know, last season. They want to go in there, they want to dictate, and they want to show BC they're the much better team. They want to beat them by a handy margin. And I can just see this juncture of the season, the health of this team right now, they want to show people they're for real. Go into Vancouver and beat who a lot of people are calling the best team in the CFL right now.
Always a pleasure, sir. Thanks for doing this, and we'll talk to you real soon.
Always good, guys. Have a good morning. We'll talk to you.
Thanks so much, DB.
Darren Bauming on the Bombers here on TSN 1290. We'll tee up the Boss Pizza fan line next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Robertson College present the return of the 10K Summer Selfie. We have $10,000 in cash prizes to award select selfie takers across Manitoba, and you could be one of the recipients to enter. Take a really good selfie at some point during the summer and post it before Thursday, August 31st, to Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram using the hashtag 10K Summer Selfie. Show us an amazing photo or take a theme selfie in one of five bonus categories. Your picture could be worth at least $1,000 or more. Our favorite picks in each of the below categories will be selected and revealed Tuesday, September 5th. Keep your phone charged and be ready to capture the best that summer 2017 has to offer. Here are the selfies we're looking for. Best smile selfie presented by Toddlers to Teens is a $1,000 prize, as is best outdoor selfie presented by Lacoste Garden Center. Best hair selfie presented by Aura Hair Group. Best food and drink selfie presented by Booster Juice. Best animal selfie presented by Assiniboia Park Zoo. And the $5,000 prize selfie is Selfie of the Summer presented by Robertson College. For more information, visit TSN1290.ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon as we tee up the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290, starting in 8 minutes at 9 o'clock. And, of course, you can text us at 1290-90 as well with standard message rates applying. We started with Blue Jay talk and the game last night, 15 innings. And then we delved into gentlemen the movie talk, and there's the, I guess it's a elimination bracket that they're doing for some sports movies, and in one of the brackets is Slapshot versus Bull Durham.
In round one, there's 36 movies served up, and there's some real questionable oversights here. Like, for instance, a movie, Friday Night Lights, isn't up, or The Program isn't up. And The Program, a lot of people think football-wise, is maybe top three type football movie.
I really like The Program, actually.
Yeah, a lot of people do. And there's some other, like, other movies, like for instance, The Karate Kid being considered just as a sort of the lightheartedness of it, and even to bypass any Bruce Lee classics and have The Karate Kid is another discussion. But so a lot of people taking offense to some of the movies listed, but of a 36 movie showdown set up in a bracket formation, how in the name of Crash Davis do you have Slapshot and Bull Durham meeting in round one? What an absolute atrocity that is.
So who do you have
coming out of it?
Yeah, out of that is it Slapshot or Bull Durham?
Well, hey, man, we're Canadian. If you don't say Slapshot, I think you go to jail. We established for, a five-year sentence, something like
that. 5 years with 10 years on probation,
yeah. But, I mean, I was going over some of the Crash Davis quotes right? Some of them, the quotes from Bull Durham, they're just, this is a wonderful film. And for, I might prefer some sort of form of death in this thing instead of having to pick one in the first round. I might just fight this one to the death.
Yeah, this is a finals matchup. It's not a round one type of thing.
At least final four for sure, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I'm taking Slap. I mean, I think Slapshot's my favorite sports movie of all time, so nothing's going to beat it. But, I mean, if you have Kevin Costner in a baseball movie, I don't know how much better you can get when it comes to baseball. Mm-hmm.
I'll take Slapshot, too. Who would you take in a face-off? Who will you take between Slapshot and Bull Durham? The other question we just delve into is poker or sport?
Yeah,
to win the World Series of Poker, it takes days, and sometimes days are 12, 14, 18 hours. Is poker a sport?
I love poker. Poker's a game. I have to attach some level of physicality, and I know the mental warfare of poker is something some people have and some people don't have, maintaining discipline, keeping your focus, all those sorts of things. But, no, I have to draw the line at some level of physics. The same way that chess is a game to me and not a sport, although like it's wonderfully competitive and all those sorts of things. This is an age-old debate, but I got to say that no, poker is, and games such as chess, those are games. They're not sports.
It's grueling.
Sure. So is Monopoly with Grandma at 3 in the morning. I don't call that a sport. If the most physical activity you do is go to the bathroom, it's not a sport.
Wait a minute. Don't just brush over this. What are you doing up at 3 a.m.? What is your grandmother doing up at 3 a.m.?
And you don't leave the Monopoly table. Not at the Verwicki household, at least.
So it started at 7, and you're just going, okay, that's different. I got into Monopoly when I'd come home from the bar, and we'd play till 6 a.m. So that's why I was asking. Never mind. You and your grandmother sat down at 7, and it's 3 a.m. You're still playing. I get it now. Go on.
Yeah, but it's not a sport. Come on. Poker is fun to watch. It's not a sport.
And we asked this question because they have Rounders, which is a tremendous film, and we've quoted dozens of times on this show, but they have Rounders within that sports movie bracket.
Yes. So hence the debate of is poker a sport? And I like that we got a lot of comments on Twitter.
How about the eating thing?
Right out of the gate. And then the competitive eating came
like
up.
Like the competitive, that is wickedly physical. And I don't understand the however many
the
hot
allure,
dogs
yeah.
in. Well, I don't even understand what it does to your body. Like watching these guys and gals eat the way they do, they only show the front end of these things. Right? The whole back end, it must be
literally
an absolute nightmare of epic proportions that I don't want anything to deal with. Like stuffing in 110 hot dogs is one thing, but how do you deal with the exit of that is an altogether another nightmare. But is that like to me? I can concede that there's definite sport involved in these
really?
Eating contests.
Well, eating the physical contest demands, is more of a sport than the World Series of Poker.
The physical demands of stretching your stomach out and preparing for these things. I've witnessed like one professional leader up close, and what he did was, in a physical sense, is something I want nothing to do with.
Well, you weren't here, JT, but I took part in an eating competition between the three stations here, right? Remember the pierogi?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and
it was a lightweight
I swept the floor with
competition,
them,
right? Like,
I don't know. I don't know if eating can be considered a sport. It's not that what they do is not amazing, but
you're bragging about out-eating Ace Burpee?
It was actually LTI.
Oh, LTI is a different story. Burpee's like what, 120?
It was LTI and Bo.
Hey, those little guys. One thing these eating
Bo
contests.
Bo is impressive. You'd be Bo.
One thing these eating contests show you, that size of the fight and the dog, you can't measure it by how big or small or big the man or woman is, man.
We didn't get into the power plays again yet, but who would you like on the Jets power play? Who would you like in the Jets penalty kill? 780-1290, is poker a sport and Slapshot or Bull Durham? And Casey at the Bat just tweeted, Hoosiers versus Raging Bull in the first round is another atrocity.
Yeah.
Well, they're all great sports movies.
Well, they're not all. Looking at this, like the...
Well, Raging Bull, Hoosiers, even if they weren't in the first bracket, put Hoosiers, Raging Bull, Slapshot, and Bull Durham in, and those aren't four great movies? Those are all
those
four great movies.
Yeah, those four specifically. I thought you meant all the other ones that are up here, but like The Replacements...
That was an awful movie.
When you're talking about like not having, for instance, the program Friday Night Lights in, like Happy Gilmore, I don't see any Caddyshack anywhere, boys.
Like, well, those aren't sports movies.
No, so. Yeah, they're more like, yeah, right?
It's so like a
comedy. I'm just saying
in the
that
world,
it's
yeah.
in there.
Yeah.
The debate rages, 780-1290 on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Robertson College present Manitobaville. We're awarding $25,000 to put towards a project that enhances one special Manitoba community. All entries are in, and our panel of judges will now narrow down the selection to our top 10. You'll be able to watch the top 10 project community videos as of Monday, July 24th at TSN1290.ca, where you'll also be able to vote for your favorite. Whoever gets the most votes as of Friday, August 4th at noon will receive the $25,000 grand prize. Manitobaville, making one hometown even prouder. Presented by Robertson College and proudly supported by Chicken Chef, Star Ready to Move Homes, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, and Merrick Contractors. For more information, visit TSN1290.ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon and the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290, or text us at 1290-90 with standard message rates applying to get in on the conversation. And lots to get to today. Bull Durham or Slapshot? Bull Durham or Slapshot? Which film would you take over those two?
Is nobody's going to say Bull Durham, are they? Here?
I don't know, man. Bull Durham is the Slapshot of baseball.
That's a fair point to make.
It literally
is. But it's
is.
Baseball, and this is, and baseball is wonderful. But we are here in Winnipeg, Canada. And hockey.
I lean towards Slapshot just given the fashion show scene. Just that scene.
I'm going
to
do it.
I'm going to do it. Yeah, yeah. Everyone's going to be shocked except for my wife. But Bull Durham also has.
The speeches, right? Like some of the quotes. Like, I don't know that Slapshot's got something to counter the. I believe there ought to be a constitutional amendment outlawing AstroTurf and the designated hitter, .. Like that whole speech,
yes.
Right? I don't know that there's anything that matches that from Slapshot. Although there's some incredibly crude moments in Slapshot that you can't even share on air anymore.
Would it kill you in small circles even.
Yeah.
Would it kill you to put some Downey in this once in a while? Bull Durham or Slapshot, is poker a sport? And also, the Jets power play, who do you want to see out there? And the penalty kill, who would you put on the power plays and the penalty kills given the roster as it sits right now? 780-1290, Ron, you're on The Big Show. Go ahead.
Hey, guys, how are you doing?
Well, how are you?
Oh, pretty good, thank you. We're talking about movies. I won't mention those two, but a couple baseball ones that I enjoyed was The Natural and 42, they're pretty good movies.
Yes. Amen to that, yep.
A lot of people think The Natural is the best baseball movie mm-hmm. ever made.
Yep. It was a great movie, there's no doubt about it, but I did enjoy 42. Anyway, guys, talking about baseball, I went to the game last night, and it was a thriller. It was a good one for the Gold Eyes.
Another walk-off home run, I heard.
Yeah, Wes Darville, the man on third and first, I think, one out, and first pitch right over the right field wall. It was nice, it was exciting.
Keep the streak going. They play again today at 11 at Shaw Park if anybody's interested in catching the fish and the St. Paul Saints.
Right.
Is poker a sport, Ron?
I don't think it is, but it certainly is quite a mind game. Boy, it can be tiring mentally. I watch it on TV sometimes, guys, and boy, you're using your brain a lot.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for the call. We appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Have a good day, guys.
Take care,
you
man.
Too. Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290, if you want to weigh in on the conversation.
We got an interesting caller here, so I'll keep my fingers quick here, but we got Denny Lemieux, apparently, joining us to weigh in on the movie debate.
Denny Lemieux.
TSN.
What have you been doing, Denny?
Oh, just sitting around, stopping the bucks there, hanging out with Halloran. Oh, screw it. I can't do it.
How are your allergies?
I hate the allergies. I hate them. They make me...
So you're going Slapshot?
Slapshot all the way. It was such a... It was such an informative movie in my youth. My dad took me to it when I was a kid.
Your dad took you to Slapshot?
took all of us, my whole family. It was parental guidance. And so he took all of us, my younger brother. I think I was playing 13-year-old hockey. And my coach, I said to my coach in practice, "Hey, coach, you got the foil." And he goes, "Well, what do you mean?" And I told him something. He says, "Your dad took you to the laptop?" Yeah.
Well, I'm shocked your dad took you, yeah.
But, no, it's Slapshot all the way.
I can't say I ever realized it was even in the theaters.
I guess it would have been, though, eh? Like
at the Odeon Theater.
Awesome, man.
No, sorry, yeah. No, at the Garrick. It was at the Garrick.
Cool.
But, excellent. Yeah, Slapshot all the way. The clothes, the everything. It's no way.
Yeah.
No way. No way compared to Bull Durham. But Bull Durham is getting a bit of a shaft here, being in the first round against them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is poker a sport?
Well, if you do it right with someone that you love dearly and have some amorous affection after, yeah, could be.
We're not talking strip poker, but I get where you're going there. Of course, I want to hear from somebody who does think poker's a sport and why, and then I want to hear from somebody who's played strip poker and who's actually finished the game.
Oh dear.
Now maybe we'll just stay
I'm
with
not
the
saying
first
anything.
One.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is poker a sport or not? Because you know who would argue this is Derek Taylor. Derek Taylor believes poker is a sport.
Really?
And Derek Taylor has invited me to many games when he lived here, and Rob Berkowitz and a bunch of those guys, Berkowitz, formerly Football Manitoba, and all those used to sit around, and they said that they're a prime example of we'd have a 3 or 4 hour time limit on a Friday night or whatever,
yeah.
And he said it just the time limit would be thrown away, and you just keep going.
We had
and it gets grueling.
We had a mighty weekly game with the Bombers back in the day with a group that I'll have nameless at this point in time, but it was a fantastic group. And the jabs, I'll tell you the most sportish part of poker, especially when you're in a table with buddies, are the verbal jabs. Like there is a boxing match going on with the jabs and the knockout punches verbally going on. Some of the most fantastic memories stored up in the basement of one of the guys who had a fantastic table. And boy, did we have some fun nights.
I had a buddy who used to, when I lived in Grand Prairie, I played soccer and senior men's sports, basketball and stuff with a bunch of guys. And about, of the 16 or 17 guys, like 12 of them either owned or managed bars or restaurants. And once a year, this one, and talk about the Chucks and the famous Sutherland family, my buddy Tel Sutherland used to rent a cabin in the off season in Jasper. And 16 of us would go down there. And being that they worked or managed places, they would get all the booze and all the food at cost. They would bring one kid that cooked at one of their places, and all expense paid, but they had to cook the three meals. And we would sit at that cabin and play poker for endless hours.
That's
and
awesome,
guys
man.
Would go to bed and get up and buy back in. That's how long the poker game would go.
This is going back quite a few years, huh?
Yeah, like it would. It was this
is like the Doyle Brunson days of
2000s.
Poker.
Yeah, and we would like, and people would the cleaning crew would come knock on the door, and people would be like, "What's going on in that cabin?" Actually, but
that's one cool thing when you
poker
watch
poker would last for 3 days.
When you watch poker these days, like how the old boys and gals that you'd see them so often when the poker first came on the scene, where it was so became so popular so quickly, and now in all the major shows you just hardly ever see any of the old guys like that. It's really neat.
I would argue those poker games at that cabin weren't just a sport, but it was survival. If you made it through the weekend, you were a winner.
There's the physical demands, right?
Back to the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Who's next?
We'll get Craig to hang on, but we'll go to Jared.
Jared, you're on the show. Go ahead.
Morning, boys.
Morning.
So, bringing up with best of the sports movies and such, I can't not remember. It's ingrained in my mind, the Rob Lowe punching out Racky.
In Youngblood.
In Youngblood, yeah, for sure, yeah.
Tea with Miss McGill.
Belly shots and everything like that. That was quite a classic for sure, absolutely. I can't not remember that.
So
also, when you're saying about the cabin, I used to go to the cabin all the time, and I'd bring up my buddy when we were kids, and we'd play old school Nintendo with the little fat guys and the skinny guys and the stuff for NHL or whatever the game was or whatever, shootout or whatever it was. So, yeah, good times.
Well, Baron brought that up when we first started talking about this at 6 o'clock on whether poker's a sport or not, and he said if poker's a sport, then video gaming can be a sport, because there are people that sit there and do that for hours on end too, and the same kind of mindset and the length of how long you have to stay focused and everything.
Oh, how many Slurpees would have I won at that age? Oh, I can't imagine.
Tell you, as far as sports go, like if you want to make a connection to things that involve coordination and such, video gaming, for my might be closer to a sport than poker.
Who was that NBA guy that literally was put on the IR?
No, it was the Tigers closer. I forget his name, but he had arm problems because of Guitar Hero.
There was an NBA player, too, back in my day that literally with Nintendo, when Nintendo first came out, literally missed two games because his thumb and wrist were whatever, carpal tunnel or whatever, because he literally in the hotel room would play it for 8 hours at a time as soon as they'd get back to the room after a game.
I feel so lucky that for whatever reason, I've always been indifferent to the video games.
I feel
really lucky that they've never sunk their hooks into me. I've never really understood it.
Remember that scene in Swingers when they play before the bar?
What kind of movie is Swingers?
Swingers with Vince Vaughn.
It's a beauty movie.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it made Gretzky's head bleed.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for the call, Jared. Also talking about the Jets' power play in the PK. We'll get into that in our next segment and who you'd like to see on that. But back to the Boss Pizza fan line. 780-1290. Craig, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I talked to him yesterday.
Sorry, Craig, we can't make you out there. Are you in a bad cell reception area?
I made the deal with Tracy.
Sorry, Craig, we still can't make it out. Can you go to a different part of the house or wherever you're at?
Worry.
Can't hear you, man.
Yeah, sorry, Craig, we're going to have to get you to call back in.
Fair to say that in all the sports movies, there's no further separation from the best sports movie of a particular sport to the second best, as you got in hockey with Slapshot, and then to what's number two? It ain't even close.
Yeah. I guess Miracle would probably be number two, right? Miracle was pretty solid, but I get what you're saying.
But the separation is, compared to all the other, like the football movies and the baseball, it's night and day.
Yeah.
Interesting. We'll take a break, and we'll delve into this more if you want to join the conversation. Slapshot or Bull Durham, which movie are you picking as the better one to move on in a bracket for sports movies? And is poker a sport? And also, who do you want to see on the power play this year for the Jets and the penalty kill? That's coming up next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 Summer Street Team is at Winnipeg's best events all summer long. We'll be at concerts, sporting events, charity fundraisers, and more. And we'll be bringing our Spin to Win prize wheel to give you the chance to win great stuff like Jets gear, Tim Hortons and McMunn & Yates gift cards, a Burton snowboard with bindings from Alter Ego Sports, weekend round trip getaways from Explore Egan, Minnesota, and much more. Here's where you can find us next. It'll be at this weekend's MTS Super Spike, July 21st and 22nd at Maple Grove Rugby Park. And congratulations to Ryan Gallagher. Ryan has won our passes to Super Spike, and we'll be giving away more tomorrow and Friday as well prior to that event. For more information on the street team, you can visit TSN1290.ca. Back to the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. We're going to get into Jets power play and penalty kill, who you want to see out there, but we're also asking you Slapshot or Bull Durham in a bracket. Which film do you take out of the gate, and is poker a sport? Greg, we got you back on a clearer reception. How are you? We're back on the big show.
That's fantastic. You guys are wonderful. You're forgetting two, though, you know, Tin Cup and the Bad News Bears. But I think I'm like 25% on all four of them. They're all good. Yeah.
Tin Cup is involved in it, but Bad News Bears is not. They do have the Sandlot in there.
Well, I don't know about the Bad News Bears, but I guess it was the kind of a community that they surrounded. But at any rate, it's a wonderful conversation. the poker aspect of it all. Of course it's a sport. Anything that people pay to see is a sport, isn't it? Or do you have to physically be involved?
Well, the debate was, it originated back in 2009 on our affiliate station, the Team 1040 in Vancouver, David Pratt and Don Taylor, and they were just sort of discussing golf, actually, and the Open, and what are the challenges of golfing 4 days in a row and to win, and you know whether you need to be, how good of shape you need to be in it to win, because you know there was the out-of-shape golfers who were doing some damage, like John Daly and whatnot. And then the World Series of Poker was brought up because a 77-year-old at the time in 2009 or 8 won the World Series of Poker. And David Pratt brought up the idea that, you know, poker's a sport because a 77-year-old had to sit at the table for 12 to 18 hours for days on end in a row, back to back to back to back, in order to mentally stay focused, go round after round, hand after hand, in order to win the World Series of Poker. And Don Taylor, who's a famous broadcaster out in BC as well, was flabbergasted by this. And they got into a heated debate about it. It's one of the most heated debates I've ever heard on Canadian radio. And it got to the point where Pratt is screaming, like, days on end, and at that age, and to stay mentally focused, and to sit at that table, and everything. And Don Taylor, you do more physical activity folding laundry. And they went back and forth on that. So that's where the debate is. Is it, you know, and then you bring in video games and everything else. I don't know. But is poker a sport? I don't know. Like, I don't.
The debate's been around forever, and yeah. I remember in the locker room, like, having the debate and seeing even up here on my timeline here, people asking if sports like pool, or is pool or golf, are they sports? And I say that they are, or certainly golf, it's a ridiculous question, but pool and darts, for instance. Like, darts, you're still, there's eye-hand going on, and all kinds of, I think, athletic ability still of putting everything together to send the dart where it needs to go. And pool, the same thing in lining up all that stuff and how you strike the ball and the lineups and stuff that you take in effect. To me, there's athleticism involved in understanding those things as well. So it is a great debate, though, and one that's been around forever.
Yes, interesting. Thanks for the call, Greg. We appreciate it on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Bryce, you're on the big show. Go ahead.
Hey, Jim. I'll just touch on the poker thing. Of course, it's a sport. Anyone who's played it competitively would know, like, yeah, sitting there for however many hours, staying focused is a huge part of it. Not, like, just going out early. It's easily a sport. But I'm calling about the power play thing.
Okay.
So Jim, you and I don't know if you remember me. It's been a few months since we've spoken on Twitter. But you and I, basically throughout the entire season, we're having back and forth about lining on the power play.
All right.
And we got to the point where I had sent you a video of Ovechkin during his rookie season, proving you that Ovechkin was never really on the right side. That was when that whole thing, when line is on the right side. So my main thing with the power play this year, it's not exactly who you put on it, but who you have to take off. You have to take Bufflin off of that power play. I just don't see him contributing in any way anymore. Like, sure, he's got that bomb, but it misses the net. It just rarely tips, and he shoots it over the net half the time, and that's not helping anybody. You have to take Lowry off. I mean, Wheeler, when he's down there and he's digging, Wheeler does that job way better than Lowry does. And, I don't know, you probably replace Bufflin with Trouba, and then on the second power play, I'd say you have Morrissey. I mean, a guy like Bufflin, of course, is not going to take that well. I mean, I know Maurice isn't going to take him off the power play. And replace Lowry with probably Dano if you're going to have another digging guy for the second power play unit. But you have to switch up the power play. You have to make the power play. You have to make it around line A. Like, it's just that shot and the accuracy. I know he didn't score for however many months, but on the power play. But that, I mean, rookie season, right? If that's what we're going to use, he's going to be better next year. His shot's going to be that much better. You just have to build it around him.
Can I ask you, Bryce, why you're taking Bufflin off the power play, either the first or the second one?
Okay, well, maybe, okay, yeah, put him on the second one, but, so, my problem is, okay, actually, that was pretty ridiculous. Don't take him off the second one. My thing is, he's the focus on the first power play unit, which I don't think is I'm not a fan of that. You can put him on the second power play unit then. I mean, do you want him on the left side or the right side? Because usually he's standing, like, right on the right side, which I mean, I don't really get that, but like he isn't that bad of a puck mover. But it's just that shot is just so fast-paced. It gets blocked so easily. We saw that so many times. He turns over the puck on power plays. I mean, unfortunately, it's been so long since the Jets season has been on. It's almost hard to talk about it. But from memory, that's what I'm talking about.
But my point with Bufflin is that's weird because the point shot, fine. Like Blake Wheeler proved you don't need a hammer of a point shot to score goals from the point. But the puck movement alone and the vision that he has, is that, like, that's who he is. So I don't know why he wouldn't be on the power play. But anyways, Bryce, I appreciate the call. Thanks for weighing in. We'll touch on your points when we get back because we do have to take a break. We're up against the clock, and we'll touch on those points on the Jets power play when we come back to the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290, Jim, Troy, and Brand, the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290, taking your calls or your texts on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, text 1290-90, standard message rates applying, or give us a call, 780-1290. We're talking, is poker a sport, Bull Durham or Slapshot, and the Jets power play, who you'd like to see on it, 780-1290. Scott, you're on the show, go ahead.
Hey guys, I just want to touch on the power play and that last caller there. He had mentioned about taking Bufflin off, and that's exactly what I was kind of comment on before. Is you look at the makeup of it, the number one power, like our first power play hasn't been very good for years. It's not just a one-year thing, and Bufflin's always been that staple. And now with Line A being that staple, he's the right-handed shot on the left side ready for the one-timer. And you can't have Bufflin on his other side because that kind of takes away his shot. I mean, you can, I guess, but honestly, I think Morrissey has started to show as a left-handed shot, and you want your D typically set up on opposite sides so they can get ready for a one-timer and pass for each other. So honestly, I think Morrissey and Laine are set up to play the point on the first-line power play. Again, I don't like the caller said. I don't see Maurice doing that just because he tends to like his veterans. And then on the second-line power play, then you have a dogfight between Bufflin and Trouba. And you know, Bufflin had, I think it was about 14 power play points last year, which is reasonable. But again, it's obviously a struggling power play. So something has to give. And I think Bufflin, who takes the majority of the shots, who clearly hasn't been very effective at getting them through and getting them on net. So I think you got to consider putting Laine there. And then Morrissey again. And then Trouba would take Bufflin's spot on the second power play. And then the main last point would be, Bufflin's the best suited guy to be in front of the net. It's just
that's where I got to go.
Yeah, it just goes back to: do you want to have a fight between your player and your coach because he clearly doesn't like it?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if he doesn't like being in front of the net on the power play. How do you know that?
Well, I mean, from what I've seen, he just kind of shuts down at times and doesn't seem to be motivated at times unless he's kind of out there on the ice or kind of given his playing time and playing defense. So, you know, anytime he went forward, he just disappeared in the last 5 years.
Well, forward is a different story, but in front of the net on the power play is two different things in my mind. I know he doesn't like playing forward. I've had a discussion with Dustin Bufflin about he doesn't mind being in front of the net on the power play.
I agree. I'd love to see him there. I think that's I'm right there. Like this, so far the sentiment of taking Buff off the blue line on the power play, I agree 100% with that.
So you guys have Trouba and Morrissey on the power play and not Bufflin.
Yep.
First and second unit.
As dishing it off, yeah. I'm going to have Morrissey and Trouba out there as much as possible on those special teams, whether it's we're talking PK or the power play.
You guys have one defenseman on the power play or two?
Absolutely, only one. And I really like the point that he made. Wicks doesn't like defensemen. He doesn't have any. But I really like the point that guy made in having Line A for a one-timer, a right shot on the left side for the one-timer. And then if it's not there, to feed it back to Morrissey, who's a left shot for a one-timer, makes a lot of sense in that manner as well.
Yeah, I kind of like the righty at the top of the point there because it's easier for him to make that pass over to line A.
Fair.
You know, so I'd be more inclined to have the setup be more important than possibly a dishback. But yeah. I don't even know if – I don't know if the Jets need a guy in – like, I know that's kind of been the prototypical power play setup, right? You have a guy in front, screen the goalie, obviously, make life difficult. But does line A need a screen? Does he need a guy to potentially screen the goalie? I might try and work it so I have things more spread out and keep some passing lanes open because Laine's presence on that side of the ice is going to, or should in theory at least, you know, help open up a lot of other seams. And we've seen, you know, you give Laine a lane to pass the puck, let alone shoot it. He's almost as dangerous, you know, as a set of man in that option as well. So I don't know if the first unit I'd look to have a guy just solely parked in front of the nets. I might try and space things out a little bit.
Pretty handy, though. I mean, you're going to beat a lot of NHL goalies with some level of traffic in front. And then so long as that guy dominates below the goal line as well, right, sort of thin that if you draw a circle around the net sort of thing, anything around that area, you go get and dominate puck possession there. It'd be harder to get a guy that'd be better at dominating that space than Dustin Byfuglien. As good as Blake Wheeler is at it as well.
Yeah, I think you need somebody in front of the net, not only to screen the goalie, but for the quick rebounds and the turn and thing like that. And then
getting in the kitchen of the goalie as well. That's where Byfuglien is awesome. He always causes trouble for the goalie.
I don't have a problem with Dustin Byfuglien on the power play, just in general. And we focus on the shot. He can move the puck. And he can take the puck off the blue line.
So can Morrissey
and
True and Myers. There's all kinds of guys that can move the puck equally as effective, I think, in that position as Dustin Byfuglien.
You think Tyler Myers can
distribute the puck as well as Dustin Byfuglien in that position? Yep. Not I'm not talking exit zone passes. I'm talking standing at the top of the 1-3-1 and dishing it off a la sort of like a point guard and just feeding it. Yep, I do.
I think we're underselling Dustin Byfuglien's ability solely on the power play.
I
get
know.
The point shot. I get that. But you also understand that a lot of it's not getting through because that is the focus of the penalty kill. They want to get in front of that, which should create some other opportunities if you have the vision. However, I think to say that a guy like Tyler Myers has the same vision and puck-moving ability as Dustin Byfuglien on a power play, to me, is quite frankly ridiculous.
Give me some facts for that then.
Well, look at the points on power plays that Dustin Byfuglien's racked up over his career and his experience
he's been out
on
there
it.
For all of them.
Tyler Myers isn't on it for a reason.
Yeah, and maybe the Myers Byfuglien thing is something else, but I mean, one of the Jets had a good power play.
Well, fair enough. Like
And who's been the lead horse on that power play?
And how bad has the power play been? And look at the points he's racked up on it. So you're saying that he's like the reason?
No, I'm just saying that his efficiency on the power play isn't probably what you would like. I mean, and that's with him kind of being the focal point. I'm just saying that if you have Laine as the focal point, I'm a little concerned that Byfuglien would ease back on that shoot everything mentality. If he's willing to be the setup man for Patrick Laine, then sure, put him on the power play. But I'm looking at what he's done in the past, and in the past, he's been shoot first, ask questions later, a kind of defenseman.
But he's been told to. Like, I have no problem with the focus of the power play changing whatsoever, and I think it probably should. But I just think taking him off the power play completely with the skill set that he has.
I'm not saying take him off completely. I'm saying putting him in front of the net. That's where he's going to be the most dangerous, most effective.
Yeah, and some of our callers are and stuff. I'm just saying, like, I don't have a problem with the focus of the power play shifting, and I don't have a problem with that. But to take him off the power play with his puck-moving ability and skill, I think is – I mean, what are you paying him $7.6 million for?
Well, that's another conversation.
It's to – one of the main factors for paying him that is to be on the power play and to do what he does with his skill level. Back to Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Who's next?
Terry.
Terry, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Morning, gentlemen. Good discussion. My only biggest concern for this upcoming year is while the Jets have improved player-wise, I got some severe concerns regarding the coaching. Not to say Maurice, you know, he's not a good coach, but in my mind, most of the coaches, they have sort of an internal blueprint of how they've done things. And so we can talk what we want to see on the power play, et cetera, and play defensively. But I don't think that, in my opinion, is going to translate in this year behind the bench. Special teams, there's been no changes there. So what's happened in the past is what we're going to see in the future. And the old definition of insanity is expecting a different outcome and doing the same thing over and over again. So while we can, you know, you guys have bring out some real valid points, and I don't think the coaching staff really noticed there's an issue or a problem. And hopefully I'm proven wrong, but you know what? In the first six power plays, we'll know right off the bat. If I see Line A not getting where he needs to be, or having Bufflin on the point, part of the hockey and a power play, I call it playing poker. You know, you gotta keep your cards and don't have it that consistent. What does Dustin Bufflin do on the power play? He basically damages the backboards with his hard, high-rising slap shot. It's predictable. Goalies know that. What you see him on the point, you know it's on his stick. He ain't passing it off. He's going to shoot. So as a result, you know, I'd sooner have him in front of the net. We have enough skill-moving defensemen on there to, like, change it up. However, Paul Maurice, if you're listening, please change your plan a bit and mix it up. But I would have liked to have seen a little more coaching changes on the special team. That has remained the change. And so hopefully we don't blow, you know, half a season to get to a point where, geez, we need a coaching change. But we'll know it right off the bat. This is not his first day of the rodeo, and now he's with the Jets. Is this his third season? So we'll know really quickly, probably in the first half dozen games, whether or not there's changes both on the power play and on the penalty kill. So anyways, gentlemen, I'll let you go. I look forward to your comments.
Yeah, thanks, Terry. I appreciate it. That's my sort of, I don't like to call it a defense, but people like, why are you still with Paul Maurice? And I go, well, if we sit here, if Terry and the three of us sit here and talk about the power play and know that it's not good in defensive zone play, what makes you think Paul Maurice isn't aware and isn't going to try and fix it?
Well, of course, he's tried to fix it already, but it's been, I mean, there's no question whatsoever over the last, since the playoff year, right, where they had a surge in the power play and the penalty kill, but it's been struggle since then. They're trying to fix it, and they have yet to find the remedy for it.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Like, that's why I don't, like, to think that if they do the exact same thing again when it's not working, I understand that. I don't understand, like, I'm just to the point, like, I'm interested to see what they come up with. And if it doesn't work, even if it is different, then I think you have a major problem. I agree with that assessment of Terry. I just think that he's going to do the exact same thing and have Dustin Bufflin do the exact same thing and do the exact same thing with Line A and everybody heading into a new year. I don't see that happening. I think that I'm interested to see what they come up with, actually, and how it works. And if it works. Because if it doesn't, there's big trouble. Yeah,
better work.
Boss Pizza Fan, thanks for the call, Terry. Thanks, Scott, as well. Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Who's next?
Kenny.
Kenny, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hey, fellas. Good morning.
How are you?
Doing great. Now, here's what I'm thinking. Why not put Line A on the power play for the full 2 minutes? Is it a fatigue issue? I personally think that he could play the full two. He's got arguably the most dangerous shot in the league. I mean, or at least top five. Yeah, what do you guys think about that?
You know what? That's something that crossed my mind last night when I was sort of putting these together. Is he at 19? Is he, like, is that too much to ask? Do you need to wait another year or two, or do you just go with it? I think that's an interesting question. I don't know if I wouldn't be opposed to it, to be honest with you. I don't know if it's ready or if you want to, you know, just get a different look out there and change it up or what. What are you guys' thoughts of a full 2 minutes with Patrick Laine?
Yeah, I don't know about a full 2 minutes or so, but when you're, you know, talking about maximizing as much as possible, I want to see the number one power play out there as much as possible. And when you're talking about managing them, the time and how tired they are and all the rest of it, for instance, like when you got Ovechkin averaging 343 on the power play, I see no reason why, and I really want to see emphasis. Last year, they really, remember when they had the old guys and the young guys for a little while, and they were quasi trying to sort of split it up and all the rest of it. I want to see an emphasis of talent and production from the number one power play, and certainly the lion's share of time on the ice with that group.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm a big fan of anyone being out there for 2 minutes straight, you know, especially through the first 40 minutes. But I agree with Troy Ware. You've got to have that clear-cut number one unit, and they're getting 90 seconds, and the second unit mm-hmm. gets either the 30 seconds or the scraps. Like, just you, and it's got to be Patrick Laine on that number one unit, and you've got to roll with those five guys for 75% of that 2 minute advantage, and then whatever happens after that happens. But it's the whole minute split here and there thing. I don't think it's going to work. I just don't like that. Let your top guys go out there and let them create and have them be the ones that produce the majority of the points.
And I think that you can emphasize the usage here and the time when you're talking about utilizing your talent on the power play and also using some of your top-end talent on the penalty kill this year more so than last. You can more evenly distribute 5-on-5 minutes, relying a little bit more on your third and fourth lines upcoming this year to create the time and the rest necessary for your top-end talent to really come through for you on the special teams.
What if there's six power plays in the first 30 minutes, first period and a half?
Well, there's going to be exceptions to the rule, but the rule is that you spend the majority of the time with that number one power play out there.
That is what Paul Maurice does, too, is he lets the game dictate a lot of usage. Like, he's been on record, I'll use this guy maybe 14, 15 minutes, he uses them 25, and vice versa. Like, he would like to get guys out there more often, but given, like, penalty kills, penalty power plays.
It's true for all coaches, right? Makes sense.
Game, yeah. Great stuff today. We'll take more of your calls. Text 129090, standard message rates applying, or give us a call, 780-1290 on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
This segment is a presentation of Johnson Waste Management, a Winnipeg-run family business doing their best to be the very best. It's The Big Show on the Boston Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Jim, Troy, and Brandon. And Barry, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
A question there. So I don't have much of a problem with Maurice, but there's just one thing that I scratch my head about all the time. So we got Laine, and a lot of people compare him to Ovechkin, right?
On the power play, yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of his play style is like Ovechkin, but I'm just wondering why Maurice plays him as a right wing a lot of the time when 80% of the goals he scores are mainly from that left side in that spot, and it's almost the same spot as Ovechkin. So I think that Maurice should play more as a left wing this year, and I feel that right shots are more effective on the left side.
I think that's probably why he plays the left shot on the right side too, same philosophy.
Yeah.
Wait. What'd you say? Maurice moved. Laine came in as a left winger, move him to the right side. I think the caller's saying, why doesn't he do what Ovechkin does as that right shot on the left side? And then you're always in that lethal position on Ovechkin Island or Laine Island. And I'd agree with that.
Yeah. He said that the right side shots work a lot better on the left side. And I said, I think that's why he moved the left winger to the right side.
Well, that doesn't make sense because Laine is a right shot. So he's saying that Laine should go back to the left wing.
Oh, right. Yeah, I think it's the same philosophy. But yes, of the opposite wing is where you get your best shot.
Right. Well, and Maurice moved him to the right side early on.
The only way I think I'd be okay with Laine, if we're just talking power play too, but you know,
I think he was talking 5-on-5.
Yeah. Well, that makes no sense. I don't. I mean, he could score from there, but he's going to score a lot more on the other side. But you know, we saw this power play set up a bunch in the Worlds, and I think it was the Russians. I don't know if the Russians started it, but they operate
they
a lot more than other teams do, and that's with the two guys
too deep
below the goal line,
yeah.
Right, and working the puck behind the net. So if Laine was on his right side there, you know, if you're working it back and forth and moving it up to him, that would be kind of his one time side. But I don't know if the Jets would.
Is there any understanding? And this is goes back to the conversation Bryce had with me and the videos of Ovechkin and all this. Is there any understanding of an 18-year-old coming in and doing what he did very well, but also putting him in different scenarios and different positions to see what not only you can get from him, but also rounding out his overall game, especially as an 18-year-old player? Because I see that. I see putting him in different situations, as good as he is at the ones he's good at, to see what else you can get from him and where else he can develop, especially as an 18-year-old. Like, this whole idea
makes,
of just
it makes
putting
no
him,
sense to me.
No, makes no sense to you.
No. Not Ovechkin and Stamkos never moved to the other side because they were among the league. You have a guy that's among the league. At the time, I think he scored that eighth power play goal when it was against Dallas early in the season, and he was among the league leaders at that time. He doesn't need to learn anything else, on the power play at least.
That was
have
the
him
two
on that
in one
side.
Game? Was that the two goals in one game, and then he got
and then
sat?
The comments
that's
after.
That's the comment, that got him into trouble, right?
I think it was more along those lines. If you're one of the best at what you do on that side of the ice, stay there. Don't worry about, especially on the power play. I don't need him to round out his game on the other side.
Exactly.
Well, they did do it with Ovechkin. Like, that's how the debate with this Bryce came up. I knew they did that at the start. But
you
said that,
but no one could find any evidence of that.
I got video of it. And I talked to coaches that told me, yes, it wasn't very long, but they did try him at different spots. And I'm just saying, as an 18-year-old, I don't have a problem with a coach putting him in different positions to see what he can become.
I don't even understand.
Like, we saw Blake Wheeler on the point for the first time in how many times years in the power play. How is it different for a 30-year-old player than it is an 18-year-old?
Well, it's hugely different because Blake Wheeler, it's not obvious. Like, what Patrick Laine has is absolute world-class elite shot-making ability. Blake Wheeler, that is not his forte. It is more puck distribution. So it makes a lot of sense, actually, as the power play changes and personnel comes on, that you find a place to make the best of what Blake Wheeler brings to the table. And for sure, being up high like that, distributing the puck, that makes sense with him.
And I'm not saying don't have him where he's most successful. I get that. But as an 18-year-old, I have no problem with a coach trying some things for a couple games in a different position to see what you get from him.
Say, how about putting him where he helps the team the very most?
I'm sure he'll be there. Thank you for everything on the big show, 780-1290 on the Boss Pizza fan line. We're back tomorrow morning. Hey, we got some stuff to give away. We have a pair of tickets to WWE Live at Bell MTS Place September 30th, 780-1290. We also have two tickets to the Canada Summer Games event and official TSN 1290 Canada Summer Games pin. And we will get you to basketball August 4th at the Duckworth Center. First two callers through. Or 12th and 13th callers, 780-1290. We'll be back tomorrow morning. On behalf of Troy Wessler, Brandon Rurwicki, and Jim Toth, this is The Big Show. We're back tomorrow at 6 on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rurwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.